Now, in a black and white film, words appear over a map of Southeast Asia. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, a Mervyn LeRoy production, copyright 1944, with Van Johnson as Lieutenant Ted Lawson, Robert Walker as Corporal David Thatcher, Phyllis Thaxter as Ellen Lawson, Tim Murdoch as Lieutenant Dean Davenport, Scott McKay as Captain Davy Jones, Gordon MacDonald as Lieutenant Bob Clever, Don DeFore as Lieutenant Charles McClure, Robert Mitchum as Lieutenant Bob Gray, John R. Riley as Lieutenant Jacob Shorty Manch, Horace McNally as Lieutenant Thomas Doc White, and Spencer Tracy as Lieutenant Colonel James H. Doolittle. Screenplay by Dalton Trumbo, based on the book and Collier story by Captain Ted W. Lawson and Robert Considine. Produced by Sam Zimbalist, directed by Mervyn LeRoy. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Christopher Flowers and Dutch Priest. Read by Pat Lentz. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. Now, words appear. 131 days after December 7th, 1941, a handful of young men who had never dreamed of glory struck the first blow at the heart of Japan. This is their true story we tell here. Now in an office. A square-jawed man in uniform studies a beach ball-sized globe on a pedestal. Nearby, a balding officer with four stars on each shoulder paces in front of a desk. Moving to the desk, the older officer answers a phone.
Yes? Just a minute. Your call, Colonel.
Thank you. Hello? Captain York, please.
You know, if this thing works out...
The general moves to a wall map.
It might give our boys all the way from Bataan to Singapore a big lift. And it may pull a lot of Japs back to their islands.
It'll work out, General.
I'm sure it will.
Hello? Hello, York? Doolittle. York, I want you to get 24 B-25s with volunteer crews down to Eglin Field as soon as you can. The job will take them out of the country for about 3 months. Tell them it's a secret mission. They won't know where they're going until they get there. That's right, volunteers. Tell them they're not to talk to anybody. That's an order. I'll join you in a few days. Bye.
Now, three twin-engine bombers fly close together. Aboard one, a pilot speaks into a handset.
We're 02241 to Eglin Tower. Three B-25s request traffic and landing instructions. Go ahead.
Army 4-1, the left-hand pattern. Wind direction north by northeast. Land on runway number 3.
In another plane.
There's the field, all right.
An aerial view.
Did you ever see such a wide runway?
She's big, all right. You can almost close your eyes and get in.
And I'd get plenty to know where we go from here.
Yeah, so would I. Hey, don't do anything till I get my camera.
A third soldier radios the bombardier.
How's she look through the nose, Carver?
Great. Florida. Palm trees, alligators, bathing beauties.
Hey, Thatcher, have a look at the real country.
A skinny corporal.
It's not as pretty as Billing, sir.
Did you keep the cookies this trip, Thatcher?
Yes, sir. I had a little trouble coming over the mountains, but I hung on.
02241 to flight.
Go around, make an echelon right.
Once over the field, then break away. Let's make it pretty.
The pilot tugs his scarf.
It's for luck.
One plane banks underneath the other two and falls in behind them. Now the planes fly side by side over tall trees. One at a time, they lower to the runway, landing smoothly on the pavement. The crewman with the movie camera films their landing from his window. Now, as a tow tractor pulls a fuel trailer, the landing plane taxis past more B-25s. The bombers sit in front of a dozen more of the grounded aircraft. The pilot with the scarf leans his head out of the window.
Switches off!
The engine's propeller slows its rotation as a man places blocks under the plane's wheels.
525, not bad time.
Yeah, we moved. Better write that left engine up, she sounded a little rough.
Boy, I got some swell shots, Lawson.
You really made a nice breakaway. Gave me kind of an artistic angle.
Someday I'll do a crash landing so you can get a real movie.
Thatcher says that Florida can't compare to Billings.
trouble with Thatcher is he thinks that any place with more than 300 people is overcrowded.
Well, according to the last census, sir, Billings has a population of 16,380.
16,000? Oh, no, Thatcher. You must be thinking of Greater Billings.
No, he's right, Clever. They count the cows up in that country.
As Lawson's co-pilot Davenport walks off, an MP spots McClure filming.
Yes? Cameras aren't allowed on the field.
What?
That's right, sir. A lot of secret work goes on here, and they're very strict about it.
Well, I can't see anything secret from here.
Then I'll have to report you to the commanding officer, sir. Those are my orders.
Okay, okay.
Hey, look. Rick Holstrom's still with us. We were afraid you wouldn't get that turkey until tomorrow.
Why, that baby flies so pretty we floated the last 200 miles. Hey, you guys ready?
Yeah. Come on, Brick.
Lawson, Brick, and Davey head off.
I'll be right back and tell you where your quarters are.
Yes, sir.
Come on, Davey. You've got an idea. What's the dope? Where do we go from here?
Well, I already told you. All they said was that it'd take us out of the country. We'd be gone about 3 months, and it'd be dangerous.
Look, I got the real dope from Joe Randall. He says they're forming patrol squadrons to guard the canal.
What's dangerous about canal patrol?
Well, what are we worrying about? Ski'll give us all the dope when we check it anyhow.
Now the three pilots salute an officer at a desk.
Three ships in, sir. Holstrom, Lawson, and myself.
Good. Your ship's okay?
Yes, sir.
Sit down.
Where we stand, Ski?
The government's leased a hotel near here. They call it the Officers Club. The men whose wives are coming can stay there. The other officers' quarters are in Barracks 5.
Is Emmy coming down?
She'll be here in a couple of days.
Well, I put that to Ski.
The enlisted men are assigned to Barracks 12.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope. At least not until tomorrow morning.
Well, we'll be seeing you.
They salute and start out. Brick turns back to Captain York.
Say, Ski, the guys are all crazy to know what's up.
You know as much about it as I do. We may be given more information in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lanky officer slaps an overhead beam in time with the music. His gangly limbs writhe as he dances. Other officers crowd around a record player as the three pilots and their crews enter the officers' barracks. The lanky man spots Lawson.
Beat me, Daddy. Look who's coming.
Well, well, well. Plant me now and dig me later. This is the pride of Randolph Field. Hiya, boy.
Great, Shorty. The minute we heard that razzmatazz, we knew you must be somewhere around. You volunteered for this deal, too?
Sure enough. They had me stationed up in Minneapolis. Coldest country I ever did see. I'd have volunteered for anything to get back in the sunshine.
A soldier blows cigarette smoke through the crook of Shorty's arm.
Bob!
Hello, Ted.
You guys know each other?
Oh, we just went through Kelly together, that's all.
Sure, Bob is bridesmaid at my wedding.
Wedding? Nobody tells me anything anymore. How long you been balled up and chained down?
6 months in 5 more days.
Well, blow my foot off. Skin me again, boy.
Brick greets another soldier.
Brick. Hi, Don. I thought you were hunting subs.
Was.
Got me one, too. You in on this deal?
Sure, I've got a swell crew and it looked like I was going to be something. So why not?
Any ideas what we might be up to?
Oh, just a hunch.
Yeah? Well, give.
South Seas. Knock ourselves off a few meatballs.
Yeah?
Later, a group of men sit with Shorty next to the record player. Shorty grins broadly, shaking his clasped hands to the music. Nearby, Bob plays poker with the three pilots.
Three. Honest man.
Dealer takes two.
You know, I just got an idea.
About what?
About where we might be going. The way it looks... No, that's not right. Forget it.
Says two. You know, I got an idea, too.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. I've got an idea you're pretty much of a dope to have come in on this deal in the first place.
What kind of a crack is that?
Oh, I don't know. You're married. You've got a swell girl. I never would have stuck my neck out if I were in your boots.
Ah, go away. You say two?
Mm-hmm.
And up here.
Brick shakes his fist.
Oh, those guys are off again.
Several men rouse others from their bunks.
Hey, stand up!
Don lays on his cot on his stomach. Nearby, another young man lies staring at the ceiling.
Have you ever carried a navigator in your ship before, Spike?
Uh-uh.
Neither have I, until I volunteered for this job.
Oh, we're gonna see some fancy stuff, all right. I kind of got a feeling...
Shoot me for a polecat! Do I see two red-blooded citizens lying on their backsides while the Texas anthem is being rendered?
A man lifts Don up by his robe.
What are you beefing about, Shorty? You're from Virginia.
That's right, Sharp Cat. But my pal here, he's from Texas, and he takes offense easy.
An officer enters.
Outlanders,
that's a new
system.
Hey, you guys, shut up.
What's up? Quiet, fellas. Listen, Jimmy Doolittle's down here. And he's a lieutenant colonel now.
Lawson stands.
Jimmy Doolittle, a southern boy from Southern California. Let's have eyes of Texas for Lieutenant Colonel Jimmy Doolittle.
Now, dozens of men wait in a briefing room. The square-jawed man enters.
Gentlemen, Lieutenant Colonel Doolittle.
As you were.
The men sit, and Doolittle surveys their faces as he stands behind a desk.
You men are here because you volunteered. You have been told it's a dangerous mission. I can't tell you any more than that now, but I want to emphasize the danger. The most important thing at the moment is secrecy. I don't want you to even tell your wives what you see down here. And if you think you've guessed where you're going, you're probably wrong, but don't even talk about your guess. If the slightest word about this mission gets around, you will endanger not only your own lives, but the lives of thousands of other men. Now, I want to ask you a question. Has anybody tried to talk to you about this?
The men sit motionless.
Good. If anybody on the field or off the field tries to engage you in conversation as to why you're here, no matter how innocently, I want you to get his name and give it to me, and I'll turn it over to the FBI.
Two older officers enter the back. Doolittle eyes them sternly, and they leave. Don and Shorty exchange glances.
This is going to be the toughest training you've ever had. You will have the same crew all the way through, and the same ship. And the man or the ship that fails will be dropped. You're going to do things with a B-25 you thought were impossible. Now, if any of you have any doubts, I'd like you to drop out right now. And I promise you that no one will ever think the worse of you. If you have wives or children or any other considerations that might get on your nerves in a crisis, it's perfectly all right. As a matter of fact, it's your duty to drop out.
Bob looks to Lawson, who keeps his gaze fixed ahead.
Very well. We'll have these talks as often as possible, that's all.
As Doolittle exits, Captain York stands before a map.
We're going up this morning for an orientation flight. There are four auxiliary fields. 1, 2, 3, 4. Line them up and locate them all. We don't know which we're going to use for our confidential experiments, so familiarize yourselves with all of them. Look over the countryside and we'll meet here again at 3:30 this afternoon. Are there any questions?
Don stands.
Sir, the plugs are being changed in my engines. Save time. May I go along in Joan's ship?
Right, Smith. All right, you can go to your ship now.
McClure walks out with Thatcher.
Looks to me like it's going to be a long time before you swing down Main Street of Billings again, Thatcher.
In Billings, sir, the Main Street is Minnesota Avenue.
Now, outside.
You know, that guy really means business. He had me sweating a little.
Yeah, me too.
Lieutenant Lawson?
Yes.
Someone to see you in front of the PX at J Street, sir.
Thanks.
I wonder who would...
I'll be right back.
Elsewhere, Lawson sees a smiling brunette in a car.
Ellen!
He runs to the car and embraces her as she gets out.
Where did you come from?
I drove to Carolina to surprise you, and then they told me you're down here.
Well...
He kisses her cheek.
Well, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you. And how are you bearing up?
Oh, great. You look just the same.
Well, of course I do. You can't expect any change this soon.
Huh?
He gives her a confused look.
What's the joke?
Nothing, except you're so funny. Tell me, honey, were you surprised?
Oh, I couldn't believe my eyes. Hey, let me buy you a drink. Gee, I'm glad to see you.
They head up onto a porch where Lawson places coins in a vending machine. He hands Ellen a bottle of Coca-Cola, then pops the top off another. Soldiers gape.
Come on, let's go around here.
The couple walks around the porch to the other side of the building. They stop to kiss under a sign with an arrow that reads, "To Officers Club." As they pull away, Lawson looks deep into her eyes.
Tell me, honey, how come you're so cute?
I had to be. If I were going to get such a good-looking fella.
You know, there's a lot of things I want to talk over with you.
Go ahead. Were you really surprised?
Well, no, not exactly. You know, you go into something like this with your eyes open. Naturally, you've got to take your chances.
I see. Isn't that kind of a cold-blooded way to look at it?
Oh, now, don't get mad. You've got to be cold-blooded about it. This is the most important thing that's ever happened to me.
What about me?
Well, you're in on it, too. That's why I want to talk it over.
That's very generous. Go on, Ted.
Well, in the first place, we've got to keep it a secret. I don't want you to tell a soul.
You're not... I mean, you don't wish that to happen, do you?
Oh, no, of course not. But it's a military secret. I've got my orders.
Military secret? Say, what are you talking about?
Well, this job I volunteered for. Didn't you get my letter?
No. Didn't you get mine?
No.
Oh.
Well, I suppose it's very funny, but...
Hey, Lawson! Ted Lawson!
Here.
What are you hiding out?
Bob rounds the corner.
Ellen, when did you get here?
5 minutes ago. How's my bridesmaid?
Great. Only I'm going to have to break this up. Doolittle came out to watch us take off.
Okay. I'll see you for dinner. There's a hotel about a mile and a half down the road. I haven't seen it yet, but they tell me you can't miss it.
I'll find it.
I'm sorry to have to rush off like this.
As the pilots start away, Lawson turns back to kiss his wife again. They salute Ellen as they head off.
Don't forget that.
Now, a B-25 takes off from a runway. Looming closer, it skims overhead. The plane has two vertical tail fins and a clear bomber's canopy on its round nose. In the cockpit, Lawson reaches for his handset.
Say, did anybody pick up a letter for me?
Thatcher looks into his shirt, then answers.
Yes, sir. I did this morning. I forgot all about it.
Well, bring it up.
Yes, sir.
Thatcher sets down his handset. Head first, he worms into a tunnel-like crawl space, then squeezes out near the cockpit. Standing behind the pilots, he pulls a letter from his shirt and hands it to Lawson.
I'm sorry, sir.
Okay, thanks. Take over, will you, Davenport?
Sure.
Davenport grabs his control wheel and Lawson tears open the letter. Thatcher starts back into the pass-through as Lawson's jaw drops.
Hey! I'm gonna have a baby! Hey, it's from Ellen. She's gonna be, I'm gonna be a father!
Congratulations! My baby!
As the three crewmen pat Lawson's shoulder and serenade him, Davenport tilts the control wheel. Now, high over the billowy white clouds, the B-25 swings back and forth through the sky in a rocking motion. Elsewhere, Ellen sleeps soundly in a dark hotel room. A stream of light falls on the double bed as the door opens and Lawson enters. He pads softly to the bed in his leather pilot's jacket and service cap. Leaning over Ellen's sleeping form, Lawson grins broadly. Soft light falls across her face. He turns away and unzips his jacket. Ellen's head turns on the pillow.
Hello, flyer.
Oh, I'm sorry I woke you up.
I wasn't sleeping, really. I was just dozing and thinking.
I'm sorry I didn't get back for dinner. We had a lot of checking to do.
He places his jacket and cap on a chair.
You must have thought I was an awful dope this morning. But I didn't get your letter until later, so I didn't know.
I know. Sit down.
As Ellen smiles at him, Lawson gingerly sits on the bed. She takes his hand.
I think it's swell about the baby.
And I knew you would. I wasn't a bit worried.
You know, it's gonna seem funny. I don't care whether it's a boy or a girl. Not that much. I just want you to be okay. It's pretty serious. Well, what's so funny?
I was just thinking. Here you're getting ready to go off on something really tough, and you're worrying about me.
If I were in your spot, I'd be scared to death. But I guess I am anyhow.
Purely routine stuff, Flyer. The kind of job every girl takes on. Once or twice in her life. Why don't you lie down?
Ellen leans back and inches over for her husband to lie next to her. He lifts his legs onto the bed and reclines, resting his head against hers.
You know, Ellen, I'm kind of glad I got you.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's what I was thinking about in my sleep. It almost frightened me. It seemed that I was thinking, what if I'd never met him?
Well, for one thing, you wouldn't be traipsing around the country from one airfield to another trying to catch up with me. And for another, you wouldn't be having a baby right in the middle of a war.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. I was thinking that if I hadn't met you, I'd never felt really close to anybody. Never in my whole life.
He props up on his elbow to look at her, then takes her hand.
Married 6 months and together less than 2 weeks. That's not being as close as I figure.
Don't you see, Ted? That's just it. If people can be close when they're far away from each other, well, that's what it should be.
Yeah, I guess so.
Cuddle me.
He smiles and they hug cheek to cheek. Ellen smiles over his shoulder.
I was thinking about last Christmas. The tree we set up in that Polonato court. Wasn't it an awful little room?
Yeah.
And the Christmas dinner we were planning on, and then you ran out of gas and landed in the mud up in Owako. Christmas Eve and Christmas were all over before I saw you again.
Yeah, that was tough. But I got a scarf out of it anyhow.
Well, it wasn't exactly as we planned it. It was our first Christmas, and somewhere way off, it didn't matter where, I knew I had you. Oh, Ted, it was the nicest Christmas of my life.
He solemnly gazes at his wife.
You were born to marry a flyer, Ellen. I knew that the minute I first saw you. As a matter of fact, that's why I married you.
You know, I've got a confession to make.
What?
The truth is, you didn't marry me. I married you.
Oh, you did, eh?
First time I saw you in the library at LACC, I said to myself, uh-oh, that's for me. And from then on, clear up till the night we got the judge out of bed in that little Idaho town. Nothing was an accident, Ted. I planned it that way.
You think you're pretty smart, don't you?
I'm not sure whether I do or not. You see, you didn't put up much of a fight.
I suppose you figured on that baby, too.
That's something you'll never know, Flyer. You'll never know.
Kissing her cheek, they hug again. Ellen's eyes shift and her smile fades. Lawson looks toward the noise.
The boys are working late these nights.
Yes. Do you have any idea how long you'll be gone?
But as soon as this job is over, I'm going to ask for a leave. 2, maybe 3 weeks. We'll have that honeymoon you're always talking about.
Yes, just the three of us.
As Lawson nuzzles Ellen's cheek, her brow furrows.
Ted. I do hope I don't get big and fat like that lady in Chicago.
He kisses her smiling lips. Now, Doolittle addresses the pilots and crew.
I want each one of you to know something about the other man's job. The pilots will practice every job on the plane. Navigators will learn the work of bombardiers and so forth. That's in case any of you get shot up. There's one thing more. It is inevitable that some of your planes are going to fall into the hands of the enemy. For this reason, I have ordered your Norden bomb sights removed. Captain Greening has designed a site which will be perfect for our job. If there are no questions, I'll ask Captain York to take over.
Now, on a runway.
Just like I said, we patrol off Brazil.
Yeah, but what about taking the Norden bomb sight out?
There's no chance of falling into the hands of the enemy if you're hunting subs.
I hadn't thought of that.
That Doolittle's a cheerful cuss, isn't he?
Just in case any of us are shot up. A bundle of sunshine.
Now, a B-25 flies low over a beach where Ellen and two women sit under an umbrella. Ellen waves.
Oh, it's Ted. George used to buzz me when we were first married. He doesn't do it anymore. They're not supposed to. I wonder if he still loves me.
No, I wouldn't worry about that. Every time Ski gets a new ship, he has a terrible love affair with it. But he always comes back to me, especially when he's hungry.
Just think, they'll be gone 3 months. I think I'll get a job in a defense factory. I couldn't stand just sitting around some little apartment and waiting.
What are you going to do, Ellen?
Oh, I'm just going to sit around and have a baby.
A baby?
Ellen, why didn't you tell us?
I don't know. I guess I just never thought of a way till now. As it turns out, it wasn't hard to tell at all.
Well, I'm going to have one, too.
What?
Really? Oh, gee, I think it's wonderful. George and I have talked about it, but all with him away and all, I guess I'm just too scared.
I thought I would be, too, but... Well, Ted and I figured that everything since Pearl Harbor's just been so much velvet. And then I guess that if anything should happen to him, only I know nothing will, I'd have the baby and that would be a little bit of Ted still living. I sometimes wonder how we'll feel when it's all over. Just think, being able to settle down in a little house somewhere and raise your children and never be in doubt about anything. We'll probably have exactly the same doubts that we have right now. For example, will he or will he not be home for dinner?
On a remote airstrip.
We're about to enter the most secret part of our training. This field is patrolled on all sides, so no one can disturb you at your work. Gentlemen, this is Lieutenant Miller of the Navy.
He's going to instruct you in takeoffs. Instead of the normal B-25 takeoff in 1,500 feet at 90 miles an hour, he's going to show you how to do it with a full load of bombs and gas in 500 feet at 50 miles an hour. You will attempt no short takeoffs from Eglin Field, where people can see you. Lieutenant Miller will also give you a few short talks on naval etiquette. Now, if this gives you any hints as to your destination or as to what kind of work you're going to do, don't even discuss it among yourselves. I'll ask Lieutenant Miller to take over now.
As Doolittle gets into a car, Brick winks to Lawson.
Gentlemen, those flags out there are at 100, 200, 300, 400, and 500 feet from the starting line. The line down the center of the field is to guide you in your takeoff. The kind of work you're going to do won't permit any deviations. Now, the whole idea is to get up full power before you release your brakes. Then start at maximum RPM, manifold pressure, and with your wing flaps all the way down. You'll have to rev your motors until you think they're going to burn up. And then when they reach the right pitch, and that's a matter of sound and feel more than instruments, release your brakes and hunt for heaven. I don't expect any of you to do it the first time. Gray.
Yes, sir?
Suppose you and Manch try it first. The rest of us will stay on the ground, mark your takeoff, and check the wind.
Yes, sir.
I think at first we can learn as much by watching trial runs as by actually flying the ships. So let's all line up over here and see how he does.
Now, on the runway, Bob sits in his cockpit with the plane's propellers idling, the wing flaps lower, pointing to the ground at a 45-degree angle. 500 feet down the runway, Captain Miller stands watching with the other pilots as the bomber's engines churn up huge clouds of dust. The plane lurches forward. Its nose lifts off the ground as it speeds down the runway. It passes the flag and crosses over a double white line before lifting off into the air.
What kind of surface winds, Gee?
8 miles an hour.
He didn't have his engines revved up enough.
Miller walks by Lawson's crew.
Lawson, you go next. Now remember, for our purposes, if you get your wheels a foot off the ground, that's good enough. You don't need height, but you've got to get your wheels off before you hit the last flag. A little later, we'll try retracting the wheels at around 450 feet and relying on your motors to float the ship. Don't try that just yet, though.
Right, sir.
Now, grab the column and pull her until you feel the inside of your backbone.
Yes, sir.
Lawson's B-25 reels around to the head of the runway, taking its position at the starting line. As Lawson closes his pilot side window, the engines rev and the wing flaps lower. Now, Shorty turns to Miller at the runway's end.
Did you ever take off a B-25 in 500 feet, sir?
No, but your men will. Don't worry about it. Watch Lawson there. You'll have to rev your motors at least that high, maybe higher.
Dust clouds billow behind the plane. In the cockpit, Lawson yanks back the control column and the plane moves. As the nose lifts, the plane's tail scrapes the runway. The plane crosses the double line before lifting off.
About 700 feet. Burned his tail skid. Didn't pull his wheels up soon enough.
Now, Lawson's bomber taxis off the runway, its multi-window nose bobbing up and down as it stops. Shorty runs with three other men to the plane. They arrive as Lawson and Thatcher inspect their blackened tail skid.
Brother, that takeoff was strictly on the cob. That airplane of yours looked exactly like a ruptured duck.
How do you like this guy? He takes off like an old lady in a high wind. And then he's got the nerve to talk about a real ship.
It's lucky you didn't have a muddy field or you'd still be there.
If I were you, I'd worry about that turkey you and Gray are pushing around the sky. The ruptured duck will get along okay.
Oh, I'm insulted. Come on, fellas.
Thatcher rubs the tail's black scratch with his thumb.
That won't take long to fix, sir.
Ruptured duck.
Now, a pencil writes the name Nicola in neat cursive under a list of girls' names. Ellen looks up into a mirror, seeing Lawson studying at a desk behind her.
Ted.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think Linda's a good name, if it's a girl?
Huh? Oh, yes, yes, it's fine.
Maybe Nicola. Nicola. That has a nice sound, don't you think?
What's that? Oh, yes. Look, honey, we don't have to decide that right now, do we?
No.
Leaning on her chair, she smiles at him, and Lawson turns back to his book-covered desk.
Ted.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't badly hurt, was he?
Who?
Johnny Adams.
How did you hear about Johnny?
Those things get around. He wasn't hurt, was he?
Of course not. I don't know how those things get started.
Every time a guy does a nose over in this field, it's a crack-up.
Ted, you've been working ever since dinner. Come on, let's get some air.
It's a deal.
She leads her husband out French doors to the room's terrace. Moonlight reflects off the nearby ocean as Lawson hugs his wife from behind.
Nice. I'm sorry we haven't had more time together, Ellen.
We can spare a little. We've got all the rest of our lives.
That's right.
Lawson looks around, taking a deep breath.
Something blooming. Smells good, doesn't it?
Ted.
What?
Please, don't worry about anything.
Oh, I'm not worrying. Just working, that's all. You know, this is going to be quite a deal.
You're not worried about the deal. You're worried because you've got a wife. And that's wrong, Ted.
Say, Bob Gray hasn't been trying to scare you, has he?
Of course not.
Okay. Because there's nothing to worry about. Nothing.
Silly, as if I didn't know that.
Besides, if anything did happen, you've got all that government insurance. That'll take care of you and the baby for a long while. Oh, what am I talking about? Nothing's going to happen anyhow.
Ted, look at me. That baby and I, we won't ever need anything but you. We mustn't either of us be scared about it, Ted. Because the baby's why I know you're coming back to us.
Now, a B-25 with a flying turkey dropping bombs painted on its nose taxis onto the practice runway. Doolittle watches with Captain York as Miller holds a checkered flag at the runway's white lines. The naval officer waves the flag in a broad sweep. In the bomber's cockpit, Bob pulls back his control wheel as the plane begins its takeoff procedure. This time, it lifts off the runway before crossing the white lines. The watching soldiers wave their caps in the air. Now, Lawson closes the pilot's window of his bomber. Painted on his plane's nose is a cartoon duck above crossed wooden crutches and the words, ruptured duck.
We better make this one, or Shorty will never let us hear the last of it. Yeah.
Behind the pilot, the three other crewmen anxiously wait for takeoff. As Clever and McClure look to him, Thatcher closes his eyes. On the runway, dust clouds from the engines match the overcast sky. As he watches Miller hold the flag in the wind, Lawson squeezes his scarf. The propellers rev faster and Doolittle watches sternly. Miller swings the flag and dashes off the runway as the bomber begins forward. The ruptured duck lifts off a plane's length before the double white lines. Now in the cockpit.
Hear those engines?
Like music!
Later, in a ballroom, Shorty plays the piano with a guitarist, two harmonica players, and a drummer, all in dress uniforms. A woman wearing an officer's cap kisses Shorty's cheek on her way to the dance floor. Ellen sits at a nearby table, thoughtfully watching couples dance. Another couple sits cuddling near the piano as Shorty calls out to the room filled with dancing officers and their civilian partners.
You hopped up bus drivers, it's been 10 weeks working, one night's fun. Let's go.
I got my flaps up, brother.
Heat it up there, Smitty. Boss, steam and sizzle. Where you're going, no one's going to hold you tight. Hey there, Doc. Don't you know how to dance? Huh, when they start picking black out of your feet, you wish you'd put them to better use.
I'm a doctor, not a jitterbug, Shorty.
Doc dances past the band with a smiling brunette. Lawson and Davenport approach the ballroom and smile at the bobbing crowd. As Lawson's gaze circles the crowd, he notices Don dancing with a blonde woman.
Hey, what gives?
Shorty's going to party.
Party? What for?
Somebody says he's celebrating Texas Constitution Day.
Texas Constitution Day?
Say, I'm going to sample this.
Davenport heads into the crowd, and Lawson adds his hat to a table stacked with officers' caps. As Lawson weaves through the couples on the dance floor, McClure and a partner dance past.
Grab your gal, Lawson. Don't you know Sam Houston's birthday?
Sam Houston? For a guy that never saw Texas, that mansion's really sold.
Hi, Lawson.
Hi. How's this riot get started?
Oh, it's Texas Admission Day. And that ain't no riot, mister. That's a full-fledged war. Seen Ellen? I've seen everybody.
Lawson continues on as the two harmonica players and the guitarist finish the rousing song. Lawson spots his wife and hurries over to her table.
Hello, Florence.
I dance?
All of them, my boy. Every dance from now on out, including the last one.
He kisses Ellen's cheek, then dances her onto the floor as the guitarist croons.
Sweetheart of all my dreams.
As they dance cheek to cheek, Lawson and his wife turn a circle on the crowded dance floor. Wearing a cocktail dress with long chiffon sleeves, Ellen holds her husband close. Another lieutenant dances by with a young woman resting her head on his chest. Now Mrs. York dances with her husband. She gazes at him as he whispers in her ear.
And I love you, Skeet. I love you, I love you, I love you.
Captain York passionately kisses his wife's cheek. The Lawsons glide gracefully by as Bob and Clever watch from a nearby doorway with drinks in their hands.
You know, it's a funny thing. That Lawson used to be about as graceful as a Texas steer. Now look at him.
Maybe the girl's got something to do with it.
You said it that time, Clever.
Lawson pulls his cheek from Ellen's to look into her eyes.
You know, there's something I mean to tell you more often, but I never seem to get the chance.
What is it?
Just that I love you.
They kiss and resume their slow, tightly embraced dance. Now the young woman lifts her head from the dark-haired lieutenant's chest.
I got a letter from your mother this morning. Forgot to tell you. She said to take good care of you. How am I doing?
Better than mother ever dreamed of.
The packed dance floor applauds the band as Shorty leads another song. Mrs. York sings to her husband. All around the dance floor, the familiar officers and their dance partners slowly rock back and forth, singing to each other. Ellen gazes dreamily at Ted. Woman's chin rests on her partner's shoulder, her eyes pooling with tears. Another couple share a passionate kiss. Mrs. York runs from the dance floor in tears. Her husband follows quickly behind her to an open archway. Elsewhere, Lawson holds Ellen close, her eyes glistening.
Smile and say.
Ellen smiles bravely and rejoins the song.
Of kindness yet for
all. Now, a sleeping Ellen smiles in her single bed. Nearby, Lawson sleeps open-mouthed in another. Ellen shifts on her pillow.
Ted. Telephone's ringing. Telephone, Ted.
Oh, sure.
Lawson's face sinks deeper into his pillow, then bolts upright. He throws off the blankets and hurries to the phone.
Yeah. Right now? Okay. Okay.
He groggily starts to put on a sock.
Okay.
What was it?
Oh, just another night call. But what a night.
I'm sorry.
What time is it?
Ellen grabs a wristwatch.
3:10.
Oh.
Hungover, maybe a little.
Oh, just a headache. I'm not used to party life.
He slips a shoe on his bare foot, then notices.
You go to sleep. I'll be back by breakfast time.
I'm so sleepy. Night, darling. Or rather, good morning.
Now the officers walk through fog.
Boy, if I ever get a leave, I'm going to sleep for 6 days south.
I wonder what this is.
Bob and Lawson enter the building as Doolittle, Miller, and York come into the briefing room. Doolittle zips his flight jacket and stands at the head of the room, surveying the gathered pilots with his stone-faced gaze.
Well, men, your ships are all serviced, gassed, and ready to go. You will take off in shifts. First ship taking off in 45 minutes. Captain York will give you your clearances. Now, there's one thing that must be thoroughly understood. After you take off this morning, you are to see no one, speak to no one,
telephone no one. Not even your wife. There are no exceptions. Continue your gas consumption test to your destination. Now, the work you will be asked to do will require a little low-altitude flying. So hedgehopping on this trip is perfectly okay. Only bear in mind that cowboys wear pretty tall hats, so watch your step, man. That's all. I think you're very well prepared for what you volunteered to do. And I want to thank you for a lot of good hard work. I'll see you in a few days. Good luck.
The colonel salutes and exits. Lawson leans to Bob.
I hope I get a chance to tell Ellen goodbye.
There you will.
Your destination is Alameda Field. Take the southern route, refuel at San Antonio in March. As your names are called, you can start. First flight, Holstrom, Jones, Lawson. Second flight.
Back in the hotel room, Ellen's eyes slowly open. Lawson enters and flips on the light.
Ted.
Well, this is it, honey. We're off.
How soon?
Just got time to pack. Where's my B4 bag?
In the closet, I'll get it.
Good.
Ellen hurries out of bed to the closet. Lawson opens the dresser and begins tossing clothes onto the bed.
My ties in the closet?
Yes, I have them.
Good.
As Lawson rushes into another room, Ellen carries the ties in a large black bag to the bed.
Wow. Don't go in there on your bare feet. I broke a glass.
All right. You forgot your toothbrush.
Oh, doggone it.
As Ellen packs her husband's bag, Lawson exits again, then returns with his toothbrush.
We got everything?
I think so.
Swell.
Returning with his leather jacket on, Lawson zips up his bag and turns to regard his wife solemnly.
Well, be a good girl. Take good care of that baby.
I will, Ted.
Yourself, too.
They embrace.
Oh, Ted, I'm going to write you a letter every day you're gone. I know they won't deliver them. I won't even mail them, but I'm going to write just the same. That way we'll kind of be in touch. That way we'll feel close.
Lawson pulls back, and they press their lips together in a long kiss. Lawson breaks it and grabs his bag.
Bye.
Ellen watches her husband leave, eyes glistening with tears.
Bye, Flyer.
He turns back and smiles.
Tell me, honey, how come you're so cute?
I had to be. I was going to get such a good-looking fella.
I'll be back.
Lawson closes the door, and Ellen takes a deep breath, her face strained with worry. Later, still in her white robe, Ellen stands at the terrace doors as planes fly past. The sun now brightens the morning sky outside. She holds back the drapes, her eyes fixed in the distance. As B-25s are reflected in the window, Ellen watches them fly away with a pained look, then mouths the words, "Good luck. God be with you." Now the ruptured duck flies low over farms and countryside. Wearing his parachute, Thatcher sits sprawled in back. He nods off and falls asleep. Now, through the bomber's windows, the view speeds over a herd of grazing sheep. Later, Davenport sleeps in the cockpit as Lawson flies, smiling out the window as they speed over snow-covered fields. McClure films out his tiny window as they speed by a train. Now, an aerial view shows Lawson's bomber over a wide bay. Sitting in the plane's nose, Clever sketches a picture of a happy elderly woman setting a steaming pie on her windowsill. He smiles. As he glances out the bomber's clear canopy, his eyes widen and he reaches for his handset.
Hey, the Bay Bridge is off to our right. The Bay Bridge is off to our right.
The pilots crane forward to look.
The Bay Bridge? How about flying under it?
But why?
Well, so I get some pictures. You know, shooting up at the superstructure.
Come on, Lawson.
You want to?
Sure, go ahead if it'll make him happy.
Hey!
I hope there are no cables hanging under that span.
Here we go!
The plane starts a dive toward the bridge. Over Clever's shoulder, the bridge looms larger in front of him. He looks up at the bridge, grinning as the bomber passes under it. McClure moves his camera away from the window and opens its casing.
Let's take a turn and go out again.
I forgot to put film in.
We do it to Beale. Forget it.
Oh, I may never get another crack at it.
Hey, look.
They fly over a long aircraft carrier, its deck dotted with planes.
McClure, take a look down there.
It's a carrier.
Yeah, and look at her deck.
B-25s.
Holy smoke. And this is it.
Kind of small, isn't she? Pilot to Bombardier. Pilot to Gunner. Pilot to Gunner. Thatcher. Thatcher.
He drops the interphone.
It's dead again.
We'd better report it to Doolin when we get in.
Yeah, that left engine along with it. Still seem a little rough to you?
I can't tell anymore.
Now the ruptured duct touches down, then taxis over to Doolittle, who waits on the airstrip with two other officers.
Is everything okay on your ship?
Yes, sir.
Taxi over to the edge of the carrier's wharf. They'll take care of you there.
Yes, sir.
Elsewhere, a sailor directs the bomber up to a tow tractor. Two more sailors hop off the tractor and attach a long tow bar to the ruptured duct's front wheel and lock it in place. The plane's crew watches as Lawson joins them.
They don't even wait till the fella gets out.
All Navy guys are cocky.
Miller's a Navy guy.
Well, Miller isn't exactly Navy. He's a pilot.
Now, Navy men gather around as a net full of crates is hoisted from the docks. In the distance, another B-25 taxis toward the carrier. Elsewhere, the crew of the ruptured duck walks along the dock.
Hey, Spike!
A soldier waves to Clever and the others. Spike leans on a dock marker as they approach him.
Spike?
Spike, what's the matter?
Oh, I put in a beef about my fuel pump. Doolittle told me to take her to the hangar.
Well, then you're not going?
No, and there's nothing really wrong with that plane. It's the best ship in the squad.
Boy, that's rough. And I nearly told him about our interphone.
You would have been a cooked goose.
I think, sir, I'll go and watch those Navy guys. They might bang her up or something.
That's a good idea.
Lawson stops short as he sees their plane being lifted into the air by a crane's cables.
How do y'all like that?
The crew gawks as Thatcher points to the hovering plane over his head. It slowly inches closer to the carrier.
I gotta break the duck's back, sure.
How do we get in the clutches of these Navy guys anyhow?
They continue watching as the plane is lowered onto the ship's deck by the carrier's crane. McClure smiles.
Boy, that's an awful big ship.
Yeah. Let's take a look at it.
So long, Spike.
So long, Spike.
Seeing you, Spike.
Bye, fellas.
Lawson climbs upstairs to the deck, salutes toward the shore, then to a naval officer on board.
Lawson reporting aboard, sir.
Avenger? Take Lieutenant Lawson to...
306, sir.
306.
This way, sir.
See you guys later.
Lieutenant McClure reporting aboard, sir.
After climbing a stair ladder off the deck, Lawson follows the sailor through a hatch. On another deck, the sailor waits for Lawson as he looks down the maze-like corridors that make up the bowels of the ship. In yet another corridor, the sailor confidently weaves around a corner as Lawson gazes back with a confused look. Finally, the sailor stops before a door and raises a knuckle to it. Lawson catches up and follows the sailor into a confined room with a double bunk bed and a cot.
These are your quarters, sir. Mr. White and Mr. Felton are on shore leave.
Thank you.
Are you sure you'll be able to find your way back up to the deck, sir?
Oh, sure. Thanks.
The sailor exits, closing Lawson in the tiny room. The lieutenant stands with his hands in his pockets and eyes a narrow desk that sits next to a tall chest of drawers. He turns and sits on the cot, testing its firmness, then eyes the lower bunk and presses its mattress. Later, Lawson walks hastily through the ship's corridors. He stops at a junction and hesitantly turns right. As he moves past the riveted metal walls and vertical pipes that make up the empty corridors, Lawson spots a ladder and climbs it to a hatch. He tries the hatch wheel, then frowns as it remains stuck in place. He backs down and walks to another intersection of corridors. Picking a direction, he strides away. Around a corner, Lawson comes to another junction and looks down each empty hall. Elsewhere, Lawson comes upon another ladder, then frowns at its closed hatch. He storms away, then slows to a casual gait as Davenport approaches from the other direction.
What are you doing down here?
Oh, just looking around. What are you doing here?
Just looking around.
Are you lost, too?
Am I lost? I'm trapped like a rat. I've been walking for miles. This is the biggest cockeyed ship I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I wish the deck was twice as big.
The smoking lamp is out. Smoking lamp is out.
After a shared gaze, the two friends move on. A young sailor removes his hat.
Sir, smoking lamp is out means no smoking anywhere on the ship.
Okay.
Why is that?
They're refueling, sir. They'll let us know when they're through.
The lieutenants extinguish their smokes, then meet Don at a double ladder.
Well, you guys finally got on, huh?
Yeah, we've just been looking the tub over.
How are your quarters?
Perfect. Nice room with two bunks and a cot.
A cot? Ha! Follow me, brothers. I'm going to show you real quarters. And I mean quarters.
Elsewhere on the ship, Don leads them to a wooden door.
Hats.
They remove their caps and enter. Inside is a lavish room filled with rows of cots.
What's the idea of bringing people up here from the tenement district?
This is jocularly known as the Admiral's cabin.
Looks like you guys are going to have to start bathing.
This isn't all. There's something else. Follow me.
I'd be glad to.
They follow until Don stops short.
Careful of the rugs, please.
They glance to the floor, then Don holds an adjoining door's knob.
Now, just inside, gentlemen, is something to really feast your peepers on. The first guy turns in after dinner gets this bed for the trip. You know who that'll be. Enter.
Inside, two bare feet stick out from the blankets of a king-size bed.
What dirty lowlife? Come out of there, you bone weevil.
Well, feed me, Conan, watch me grow. How did all this scum get in?
And me in an army cart.
That's where he'll end up before the night's over. Let's get out of here.
Oh, Lieutenant, when you guys go down to dinner, would you mind bringing back a roast beef sandwich, rare, and a piece of huckleberry pie? Lieutenant.
Nighttime. B-25s line the foggy deck. Lawson and Bob stroll the deck together.
Well, you're so glad you came along.
Sure, aren't you?
I've got a funny feeling about this job.
Yeah?
I think maybe it isn't going to be as much of a cinch as we figured on.
I'm thinking the same thing.
My ship's over there. I think I'll go take a look at it.
Well, the duck's up ahead. I'll see you in the morning.
Good night.
Good night.
At his bomber, Lawson smiles as he runs his hands along the ruptured duck's nose. A dark figure seated by the plane's wheel turns his head.
Who's that?
That you, Thatcher?
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, forget it, Thatcher.
Lawson waves his hand. Thatcher sits back down as Lawson tugs some ropes.
Got it pretty well lashed down, haven't they?
Yes, sir. They did a good job. I was kind of worried about her, so I thought I'd better come up and have a look.
You're lonesome?
Well, I guess everybody is, but a little, sir.
Don't bother with the sirs, Dave. Quarters all right?
Yeah, fine.
Grub's good, too, isn't it?
Best I've had in a long time, sir.
What are you going to do when we get back home, Thatcher?
Oh, I have a girl in Billings, sir. I'm going to marry her if we get back.
Oh, we'll get back, all right.
Lawson spots McClure sauntering over with his camera.
Oh, hello.
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 I
thought I'd come up and shoot the stars for a little while. I guess it's too foggy.
Pretty foggy, all right.
The three men look up. Clever examines the ruptured duck's nose as Davenport tugs some lashings. The two men join the others.
What are you guys doing here?
Oh, just getting a little air.
Yeah, it's pretty stuffy down below.
Yeah, it sure is.
You guys worry over the ruptured duck like a bunch of old maids. Me, I'm going to bed.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Ted.
Lawson heads off.
Wonderful air, isn't it?
The smoking lamp is lit. The smoking lamp is lit.
From overhead, a dozen tiny lights appear next to the planes as men light up. Morning. In his quarters, Lawson sleeps on the cot with his face crunched into his pillow. Lawson jumps awake, knocking his cot over. Two Navy men grin.
What happened?
Just battle stations. Around sunup and sundown, the pig boats give us a little trouble, so we always lay for it.
This is Jig White, now Bud Felton.
Glad to see you.
Glad to see you.
How are you?
See you later.
Are we on the way?
For the last 5 hours.
General Porter.
Glad to have you aboard, Army.
General Porters, man your battle stations. Army personnel, man your plane.
Riding his cot, Lawson scrambles to his feet. Now, on deck, soldiers in helmets look through binoculars as others rotate a large deck gun. One soldier looks through a telescope, another raises the barrel of a deck gun, and a third, with binoculars over his eyes, speaks into a handset. Now, Bud and Jig approach the ruptured duck as Lawson surveys his plane.
Boy, the only way you're going to get that thing off of here is with a crane.
Maybe so. But we kind of think we can take off on our own power.
Hey, where'd they come from?
Destroyers cruise alongside them.
That's what's known as an escort.
They just slipped up on us during the night. The Navy likes to do things quietly.
Looks like it's really going to be a show, doesn't it?
Shorty walks over.
Boy, did I hate to bot skin from sheet this morning. What a bed.
Oh, this is Shorty Manch, Jig White and Bud Felton.
Hello.
Hi, y'all.
Hi.
Hi, y'all.
This lucky stiff is sleeping in the bedroom of the Admiral's cabin.
Yeah, wonderful accommodations, but nothing much to do. I thought there'd at least be a poker game or something going on.
Oh, I guess they have them every once in a while.
How about Seven-Toed Pete? Do you ever play much of that around here?
What's Seven-Toed Pete?
Well, it's a kind of seven-card poker. I'd be glad to teach it to you sometime.
Never heard of it.
Attention, Army personnel. Attention, Army personnel. Assemble in wardroom.
See you later, fella.
Assemble in wardroom.
It's been a great pleasure, fellas. We'll certainly have to get together soon. Maybe, maybe we can get up that little game of poker.
As they watch the lanky soldier walk off, Jig puts his hands on his hips.
You know, I believe that boy wants to play poker.
I wonder if they got their pay before they came aboard.
Now in the wardroom.
As you were.
As the soldiers sit at long tables, Doolittle stands. A hornet's nest hangs on the wall.
For the benefit of those who haven't already guessed, we're going straight to Japan. The Navy will take us within 400 miles of the Japanese mainland. We're going to bomb Tokyo, Yokohama, Kobe, Osaka, Nagoya. It'll be a night job, and you will be given the opportunity of choosing the city you prefer. Now, this is going to be a tight squeeze. The Chinese have prepared small fields just outside of Japanese-occupied territory for us to land on after the raid. They'll gas us up, and we'll take off for Chungking. From now on, we're in constant danger of enemy attack. If there should be a surface attack, stand by your planes with fire extinguishers and let the Navy handle it. If there should be an attack by air, take off and make for the nearest land. The Navy will give all navigators their bearings twice a day. Now, once more, I want to emphasize that if any of you feel you're not up to this job, it's perfectly all right for you to drop out. We have a few spare men, and I think we can fill your place.
His eyes scan the crowded room of staring soldiers.
Get together with Captain York and find out what to do with your planes. We'll meet here tomorrow afternoon at 2:30. Are there any questions?
A boyish soldier stands.
Colonel, do you mind if we smoke during these assemblies?
The colonel smiles at the men.
I have no objection to that if the Navy hasn't. Anything else? Dismiss.
Clever shoots a grin to Lawson, who smiles back. Later, the pilot takes long steps along the deck. 50,
51, 52, 53, 54.
Lawson bumps five, into Shorty, who six, paces from the other direction.
Oh, sorry, man. Just getting a little exercise.
Yeah?
Well, I wasn't. I'm measuring off this cockeyed deck. And
attention all personnel. You have been wondering about the mission we are on. I think you might like to know that the Army personnel in the Hornet are going to bomb Japan. We of the Navy are going to take them in as close to the enemy as possible. This is a chance for all of us to give the Japs a dose of their own medicine. It's an Army-Navy show. Let's extend every courtesy to the Army men on the Hornet who are going to do the job. Good luck, good hunting, and may God speed us in our mission.
Have some?
A sailor offers Thatcher chocolate.
Thanks, buddy.
Thatcher smiles as he eats a piece. Now playing poker in Lawson's room, Shorty checks his cards.
You're awfully lucky for guys who never heard of Seven-Toed Pete.
They tell me Virginia's a great hunting country, too.
Was that?
Oh, yeah.
Let's play, fellas. What's the bet?
It's up to you, Manch. Don't they call Virginia the mother of presidents?
Bet five.
Up ten. Thomas Jefferson lived there, too, didn't he?
I drunk.
A lot of guys lived there. Are you sure you never played Seven-Toed Pete before?
Makes it ten to you, Manch. Have they finally gotten that hookworm situation under control down there? There never has been a case of hookworm in Virginia.
I got a small straight.
Mine's seven to the jack.
All pink.
Well, that beats. I think I'll turn in. Somebody's won a lot of dough.
A little. You just had a run of bad cards, man.
Yeah.
What say we get together again pretty soon?
Oh, sure. See you later.
Say, you haven't got any books on Virginia, have you, Madge?
You Army guys are real pigeons. I wish you were in the Navy.
Jig sits on the cot and removes his shoe.
You take the bunk, Lawson. I'll sleep here if you don't mind.
What's the idea?
That thing's as soft as a feather bed. I never could sleep in it.
Lawson grins broadly at Jig, then sits on the bed and tests its firmness.
Yeah, it's not bad. Thanks.
In the wardroom.
Lieutenant Randall is going to tell us something about a carrier takeoff. Mr. Randall.
A middle-aged man picks up a rolled flag as he stands.
From the minute you're in your planes, I'm the man to watch. Have your engines turning over as soon as the man in front of you starts taxiing. When I want you to rev up, I'll give you this.
He circles the flag overhead.
Now, if your engines don't sound right to me, I may have to keep you revved up longer than you think necessary. I can hear your engines and tell when they're missing better than you can. When I want you to start taxiing, I'll give you this. Now you're in position. I give you a final rev.
He circles the flag.
And when I drop it...
He makes a broad downward sweep.
You're off. We'll aim you straight for Japan. One more thing. Once we're lined up for the takeoffs, there can be no delays. If your plane stalls, if it doesn't start immediately, if you have any trouble of any kind, we won't have time to do anything about it. The Navy crew has orders to push the ship overboard. Make way for the next one.
Randall sits.
Lieutenant Jerika has detailed maps and pictures of cities and specified targets. Mr. Jerika spent a great many years in Japan. I think it might be a good idea if he gave you some idea of what kind of people you're going to run up against in case you're forced down. Mr. Jerika.
A stocky, mustached officer stands before the men.
I was assistant naval attaché at our embassy in Japan long enough to learn a few things about the Orient.
Bob stands.
Just what should we do, Mr. Jerika? How should we conduct ourselves in case we are forced down over Japan?
Jerika's eyes shift.
My advice is... see that you're not forced down over Japan.
Now, in a map room.
The run I've got figured out for you starts here.
He points to a wall map.
The smokestacks are bright red brick, and you can't miss them. One of the largest smelters in Japan. Then, following the line of the bay and allowing 10 seconds between bombs, you should take out this and this. Both of them are machine shops owned by brothers. I forget their names, but I remember I didn't like them.
The ruptured duck's crew listens intently.
Then on out here to drop your incendiary. How does this line up for you, Lawson?
Well, you're going to drop them, Clever. The run seems all right with me, if it's okay for you.
We can take them out.
Fine. Jones, have you got the course laid out for this run?
Yes, over here, fellas.
The crew huddles around a drafting table.
Now, you take off about here and go due west to Tokyo. At minimum cruising speed, flying at about 50 feet. When you hit the bay, get up to 1,500, complete your bombing run, then down again and out to sea, south by southeast to Yakushima.
Can we take the maps with us?
All you need.
Doolittle.
Be sure there are no marks on them, though, which might show the Japs where you came from in case you're captured. By the way, I'm taking off first with 4 incendiaries. That should light up Tokyo pretty well for you.
Suppose by the time we get to China, the Japs have taken over the landing fields.
The Chinese have arranged a signal for you. When you get to the field, if the Japs have captured it. If that's the case, you've got to keep right on going until you run out of gas, then bail out and destroy your planes.
Jerika shows the colonel a ticker tape.
Yes.
There's just been a change in the disposition of the barrage balloons over Tokyo.
He plucks pins off the map.
This balloon and this one were moved this morning to here and here.
Lawson raises his eyebrows and turns to his crew. Nighttime, Lawson and Bob stare at the ocean from the carrier.
You know, the changes in those balloons threw me. Just think. Bunch of guys sweating all day in a sub down on the Tokyo Bay. Guys just like us. Sneaking up at night to radio balloon positions. Just let me hear anybody talk about the Navy again. Boy, they're good.
Plenty. They're not bad at poker, either.
Oh, you're not kidding. I kind of figured on getting Ellen a present in Chungking. You know, a kimono or something. But these Navy guys have cleaned me. Believe it or not, I want to get $14.
Well, I got $8 or $10 I could let you have.
Oh, no, no. I've been thinking, cigarettes sell for 60 cents a carton on the boat here. But in Chungking, I hear the boys will pay $7.
Yeah?
So I figure I may load the duck with coffin nails.
Hey, that's an idea.
Bob leans on the railing.
It's a good night for subs.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When I was a kid, I used to dream about going someplace on a ship. Well, here I am.
And out there is Japan. My mother had a Jeff Gardner once. He seemed like a nice little guy.
You know, I don't hate Japs yet. It's a funny thing. I don't like them, but I don't hate them.
I guess I don't either. You get kind of mixed up.
Yeah.
It's hard to figure. Yes, here we are. All I ever wanted to be was an aeronautical engineer. I joined the Army in 40 because I figured it was the best way to learn. I wasn't sore at anybody. But here you suddenly realize you're going to drop a ton of high explosives on one of the biggest cities in the world.
You're not getting squeamish, are you?
Oh, no, of course not. I don't pretend to like the idea of killing a bunch of people. But it's a case of drop a bomb on them, or pretty soon they'll be dropping one on Helen.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder how many of us will pull through.
Oh, they figure about half.
And everybody thinks you'll be in that half.
Yeah.
When are you going to get married, Bob?
Oh, when I find somebody like Ellen.
Be swell, you know, the four of us.
You know, when this is over, I'd like to get me a small ranch. Something that would run about, 40, 50 head of cattle. Nice well and a house. Be wonderful for kids.
I've always been kind of nuts about ranches myself.
You know, in a decent year, you can make real dough out of 40 head of cattle. You got feed.
Why don't we do something like that?
Well, I'm game if you are.
Okay, it's a deal.
Good. Of course, now, if we had 80 head of cattle, we'd really have ourselves a layout.
Yeah, and our own meat, too.
Oh, yeah, milk, butter, eggs, the whole works. You know, a guy's got himself a place, he doesn't have to worry about anything.
And with a little hunting near?
Oh, sure, that's easy.
Lawson shakes his head.
Gosh, I'll be glad when this war ends.
In the wardroom.
In the event of an emergency, there will be no assembly. No last-minute instructions. We'll just take off. If you should develop motor trouble within a half hour after leaving the Hornet, fly back to the ship and land in the water. The Navy will try to fish you out. If trouble should develop after that time, you'll have to keep right on going. Because by that time, the fleet will have to fire on any craft overhead. I don't want you to throw out the extra cans of gas as you use them. That would leave a perfect trail for the Japs to follow back to the Hornet. Save the cans and throw them all out at one time.
Doolittle's gaze circles the room.
Now let me repeat something I've said previously. You are to bomb the military targets assigned to you and nothing else. Of course, in an operation of this kind, you cannot avoid killing civilians. Because war plants are manned by civilians. If any of you have any moral feelings about this necessary killing, if you feel that you might think of yourself afterward as a murderer, I want you to drop out. We'll find someone to take your place. And I promise you that no one will blame you for your feelings. Barring any sudden switch in plans, we'll take off tomorrow night.
Doolittle's eyes shift around the room.
There's one thing more.
A smile creeps onto his face.
When we meet in Chungking, I'm going to throw you a party that you can tell your grandchildren about.
Smiles pop up across the room. Thatcher grins broadly.
You're a great bunch of guys. I'm proud to be associated with you. Good luck.
Later, Lawson walks up to the PX counter.
12 cartons of cigarettes.
12 cartons?
Mm-hmm.
Say, what gives with the Army? I never sold so many cigarettes in my life.
We're chain smokers.
You must eat them. What kind will it be?
Any kind.
You just want lots of cigarettes.
You hit it right on the head.
All right.
The sailor stacks cigarette cartons on the counter as Lawson opens his wallet.
That'll be $7.20.
Lawson and the sailor gape at one another. Lawson dashes away as soldiers and sailors rush to the deck.
I'll hear this. Our carrier task force has been sighted by enemy service vessels. All Army pilots and crews, man your planes for immediate takeoff.
Jig points to a column of smoke.
There goes a Jap just 3 minutes after we sighted her.
Yeah, that means she had 2 minutes to tell Tokyo what she saw.
Lawson spots
now
Thatcher.
Get all bombs loaded on the double.
Are you all packed? Have been for 5 days, sir.
Good. Better watch how those guys handle the dock.
I will, sir.
And don't tell anybody about that bump turret.
I won't, sir.
Shorty meets Lawson below deck.
Hey, we're off, aren't we?
Yeah!
Oh, bomb me, Daddy! Ain't to the block!
Ah, ha, ha!
In Lawson's room.
I think I've got everything packed.
Oh, swell, thanks.
I'm sorry you couldn't have picked out a little better weather for you.
We'll make it. So long, Felton.
Give him a pasting they'll never forget.
We will.
He turns back to Bud.
Thanks for everything. You guys in the Navy, well, you're okay. Be seeing you.
The two rush out.
Now hear this. Clear the flight deck to start engines.
Lawson bursts back into the room, searching. He spots his white scarf on the dresser, snatches it, then returns to the PX.
Hey, how about my change?
Lawson spots his cigarettes and money on the unmanned counter. He grabs the armful of cartons and counts the bills. Leaving the money, he takes a handful of candy bars instead, then rushes out. As men scurry around the deck, Lawson runs up to his plane. Thatcher takes his bag as a sailor wheels up a cart full of square gas cans.
They're giving you 15 extra cans instead of 10.
Good!
At least getting off now and put us over Tokyo in daylight.
Yeah.
Don't forget about the crowd balloons in daylight, too.
Oh, next you'll be telling me it's good because you get better pictures in the daytime.
You're not kidding about that, either.
Let's give her a final check.
Elsewhere on the deck, Doolittle checks his plane. Now Lawson leans out his cockpit window.
Hey, Bob!
What?
Are you up ahead?
Full spot.
See you, John King!
You said it, brother!
Lawson salutes as Bob rushes off. Now, Doolittle shakes Miller and Jerika's hands, then crouches under his bomber. He watches as they load the canister-shaped cluster bombs, now in Lawson's cockpit.
How they doing?
Doolittle will be off any second. And Hoover, Holstrom, Gray, and Davy Jones, we're seventh.
Seven's a lucky number.
Dan!
Shorty shouts from the deck, waving a round container.
Put these someplace, will ya?
What are they?
Sizzle platters. I got the phonograph of my ship, but I haven't got room for the record. We'll meet in Chongqing and cut a Chinese rug.
Okay, Shorty.
Lawson takes it through his window.
Take care of these, will you, McClure?
Right.
Lawson picks up his interphone.
Pilot the gunner.
Gunner to pilot. Go ahead, sir.
Take a look at the turret if you get a chance.
I've been working on that, sir. She's still jammed.
We'll use the auxiliary power if we have to.
Right, sir.
We've got ourselves in a fine jam, haven't we, Lawson?
Well, this is a great time to think of that.
Oh, no, I mean having to take off ahead of schedule.
Oh, I'm sorry, Davenport. I guess maybe I'm a little on edge.
Bombay clear! Bombay clear!
Doolittle's Bombay doors close over the cluster bombs.
Clear on right! Clear on right!
His plane's right engine roars to life as a sailor films nearby.
Clear on left! Clear on left!
Exhaust smoke sputters from the left engine as its propeller begins whirling. An officer watching from the carrier's tower salutes Doolittle. In the cockpit, the colonel smiles and salutes back. Lieutenant Randall runs up in front of the plane's nose, wearing a life jacket and tight-fitting airman's cowl. As he motions to its pilots, Lawson's crew watches intently. Now off to the side, Randall raises a checkered flag and makes the rev signal. The military spectators wave. Doolittle watches Randall as he continues the revving motion, then reaches for his control wheel as Randall holds the flag steady. Looking toward the end of the runway, Randall gives a sweeping single wave and falls to the deck. Doolittle pulls back hard and the bomber speeds forward. The plane's wingtip passes over Randall. Doolittle's plane reaches the end of the carrier and soars into the air, heading into the overcast sky. Randall gets up and hurries off. As the bomber soars overhead, the pilots and crew wave from the carrier. In the crow's nest, men hold up a sign toward the plane. Wind from 095 degrees, velocity 13 kilometers. On the carrier's runway, Miller climbs up behind Lawson in his cockpit.
Hey! Good luck, fellas. Have a couple for the Navy.
Wish you well, Miller.
And thanks to you.
Wish y'all going with you. So long. Bye, boys.
As one plane revs its engines, Randall holds the flag in a ready position, then swings it toward the water and dives to the deck. The plane takes off, its wing gliding over Randall, then soars past the ship's edge. Now in Lawson's cockpit.
One more ahead of it.
Let's start the engine.
Let's go.
Clear on right.
Davenport opens his window.
Clear on right. Clear on right.
A sailor on deck stands ready with a fire extinguisher as the right propeller revs.
We're on left! We're on left!
A second sailor with a fire extinguisher watches as the left propeller blade spins slowly, accelerate, then die out. Lawson pushes the control panel switch again, his brow furrowed. Outside, the ground crew eyes the sputtering propeller as it grinds and fails. Lawson and Davenport frown as Thatcher stares from the tail gunner's compartment. Lawson pushes the starter again as the sailor waits, extinguisher in hand.
Those Navy guys are moving up to push us over.
Dozens of crewmen approach the plane.
They're not going to toss this ship overboard.
Lawson pushes the switch.
Come on, baby, give!
The propeller spins and fails.
Give! Give!
The crewmen watch the propeller fail again, then spin to life. Lawson makes an O with his thumb and index finger.
Check hydraulic pressure.
Hydraulic pressure okay.
Check brake pressure.
Okay.
Lawson peers out.
There goes Bob.
Gray's plane rolls along the short runway, its flaps angled down. It clears the ship's edge and lifts off.
Two more ahead of us. Check fuel booster.
Jig runs up.
Hey, Army! Dad! Get up, Army! When the gig jump came, we'll tell them it was a Navy show, too! They'll know that when they see how broke you are! Good, Army!
As they wave, another bomber taxis into position, then takes off. Lawson watches Randall motion the next plane into place, then picks up his interphone.
Bomb bay doors closed.
Bomb bay closed.
Pilot to gunner, all set, Thatcher?
Everything okay, sir.
Wing flaps down.
Wing flaps coming down.
There goes Hallmark.
Randall gives the signal to rev, then motions the plane down the runway with a broad swipe. As the plane clears its mark and lifts into the sky, Randall approaches the ruptured duct. Lawson lifts the interphone handset close to his mouth.
We're taking off, fellas. Happy landing.
In the gunner's compartment, Thatcher braces himself for takeoff. On deck, Randall guides the ruptured duct forward, motioning to Lawson with outstretched hands. As the plane wheels into position, Randall quickly snaps his arms down, runs to the carrier's rail, and circles the flag in the rev signal. As the propellers whir, Randall pumps the flag around faster and faster. Lawson and Davenport stare down the runway at the rough waters. Randall stops circling the flag and holds it out straight beside him in the standby signal. On the sideline, dozens of sailors and crewmen watch and wave. Randall waves the flag and hits the deck as the ruptured duct's wide wings glide past him and down the runway. In the cockpit, the two pilots pull back the control column and the plane lumbers upward. It dips below the level of the carrier's runway, then lifts and soars into the cloudy sky. In the cockpit, Davenport glances at Lawson. Lawson banks the plane into a turn.
Yeah.
As the ruptured duct circles back in the gray sky over the carrier, the bomber's shadow falls onto the runway deck below. Back in the cockpit, Lawson grips the wheel.
Tilt the flaps up.
Davenport glances at the controls.
We didn't even have them down.
How do you like that? I wonder what else we forgot.
Coffee, sandwiches, water, plenty.
Clever drops to the floor behind them and slithers through a passage into the nose. He puts on earphones over his officer's cap, then slides a machine gun into the turret. In the gunner's compartment, Thatcher sits between the fuel canisters, his face glistening with sweat. Lawson picks up his interphone.
Pilot to gunner. Thatcher.
The gunner grabs the mic.
Gunner to pilot. Go ahead, sir.
You all right, Thatcher?
Yes, sir.
You better get started on those cans. We've burned over 40 gallons already.
Yes, sir.
Thatcher stands and reaches for a canister.
Well, we're on our way. If anybody's carrying a rabbit's foot, hang on to it tight.
Thatcher pours fuel into the tank as the plane soars on over the water. Later, Thatcher sits at the tail gun turret. McClure checks his instruments, and Clever stares out of the clear nose canopy at the empty horizon ahead.
What's our position, McClure?
I figure about an hour and 58 minutes from the coast.
Get that, Thatcher? We can expect their fight at any time now.
Keep your eyes open.
Watching, sir. There's nothing in sight. Can we try out this turret again?
Okay, relay switch on.
Thatcher rotates the twin machine gun barrels, then fires a couple of rounds.
Works all right, sir, but that emergency power is not going to hold out long if we run into trouble.
Turning it off now.
Davenport turns to Lawson.
How far are we behind our first gang?
About an hour.
We really can get set for trouble.
Yeah, but nothing like what the guys behind us are going to run into.
Seems a lot better on a night job.
Lawson glances at the wing.
Did you hear that left engine, miss?
Davenport turns to look.
Singing like a lark.
I must be hearing things.
Later, McClure bends over a map and checks a location reading. He snatches the mic from the wall.
Navigator to pilot.
He checks his watch.
Pilot to navigator, go ahead.
We ought to hit the Japanese coast any minute.
Davenport's eyes gaze upward. At the tail gun turret, Thatcher glances around. In the nose, Clever checks the area and readies his gun sight. The bomber approaches three small boats. A white flag with a dark circle in the middle is displayed on each craft.
See that flag?
Yeah.
Clever grips his machine gun.
Saving bombs today.
They're waving at us.
Those guys must be nuts.
The ruptured duck continues on. Later, his eyes fixed on the horizon, Lawson grabs his mic.
Japanese coast, straight ahead.
A snow-capped mountain appears.
Fujiyama.
McClure focuses his camera out the window. Clever peers blankly ahead, and Thatcher scowls with clenched teeth. As the plane nears land, Davenport stares at the ragged peaks looming ahead. The ruptured duck passes more Japanese boats bobbing in the water. In the nose canopy, Clever positions his machine gun as the plane approaches the shore.
Be catching buckshot any second now.
Thatcher scans the sky, sweat beating on his forehead. Lawson flies the ruptured duck low, swooping over the white-capped waves toward the hilly coast. He then pulls up over the coastline, passing just feet over the treetops, then lowers on the other side. Clever sets up his bomb sight, squinting with one eye through its notched end, then aligns the metal sight line with his fingers. He moves to its side and checks its angle, then grips his machine gun's handles. In the gunner's turret, Thatcher glances anxiously around. Lawson and Davenport keep their eyes fixed on course as vast fields stretch below. The plane's altitude remains steady as it speeds low over a square patch of farmland. Clever continues scanning the sky in all directions. A view from the cockpit shows pastoral countryside skimming past. Meanwhile, in the gunner's turret, sunlight reflects off the clear canopy. As the bomber continues across the countryside, the plane passes over more flat wetlands. The ruptured duck flies a few feet over the water, then scatters a flock of birds on the glassy surface. Clever shifts to the other side of the canopy and again squats behind his machine gun. Through his canopy, the view bobs close to and then over a tree. Now the ruptured duck skims over rice fields divided by dirt roads on the watery flatlands. Clever nervously rubs his thigh and glances upward through the clear panels surrounding him. In the cockpit, Lawson and Davenport sit back transfixed, surveying the course ahead. The ruptured duck's shadow trails along with the plane until it lifts over a tree line and proceeds over another forested region. Thatcher stares out the turret's canopy as Davenport turns sharply. Six planes approach in formation high above them.
Zero.
Lawson grabs his handset.
Lawson, I saw them, sir. Do I turn the power on for the turret?
No, wait a minute.
The crew turns their gaze upward and anxiously search the sky overhead. Four planes pass them and fly on. At his turret, Thatcher watches the Zeros, his face shiny with perspiration.
Now, well, what happened to them, sir? I guess I didn't see it.
Davenport searches the sky as Thatcher looks overhead with a puzzled gaze. As they soar on, sunlight glistens on the water below. His brow furrowed, Davenport scans the water and coastline. The ruptured duck swoops low over a narrow causeway, flying just feet above a passing sedan. Clever grins, then turns back to his bomb site. As Thatcher continues to watch the skies, the plane skims past a thickly vegetated hilltop. A city comes into view.
There she is, fellas. Take a good gander. When we get back home, the folks will want to know what Tokyo used to look like.
Thatcher and Clever gaze sternly at the sprawling city as the ruptured duck moves closer. Clever then turns to his control panel and flicks several switches. In the cockpit, Lawson and Davenport stare grimly ahead. The plane speeds toward Tokyo, and the bombardier again grips the turreted machine gun. He glances out the nose canopy at the ships and buildings. Lawson banks the plane along the shoreline, then sets course toward a surging tower of black smoke.
That
must be Davy Jones giving him the words.
As they soar past the thick cloud, Davenport turns to look. With one hand on his machine gun, Clever bends close to the clear nose canopy and peers down at the buildings below. Thatcher's watchful gaze scans the sky overhead. The ruptured duck flies on over a railroad track, then across an inlet filled with barges. Now the bomber skims over rooftops while Clever watches for his target. Gripping his machine gun, Thatcher searches the skies. As the plane soars on over the city, Clever shifts in his seat, angles into position, and peers below. Back in the cockpit, Lawson grabs the interphone.
Flag to bombardier, bomb bay doors open.
Now, hinged double doors underneath the plane slide open, revealing the cluster of bombs. As Lawson pilots the ruptured duck higher into the murky sky, the men search the city below for the target. In the cockpit, Davenport's gaze freezes.
There we are, the big red smokestack.
Pilot to bombardier, approaching Smelter.
I'm on it.
Outside the cockpit, puffs of black smoke explode nearby.
Get around to it.
Clever squints through the notched metal bomb sight and pinpoints the targeted building.
On the way!
A 3-foot bomb drops from the bay. The bomb hits the target, sending up a cloud of thick smoke.
Go away!
A second bomb falls. As the bomb detonates, the explosion sends out fiery debris. In the cockpit, Davenport glances nervously outside.
Fly away!
Thatcher peers down. A large cylindrical oil tank bursts into flame, and a billowing fireball shoots up into the sky. The blast rocks the plane. A cluster bomb breaks into dozens of narrow tube-like bomblets that spread out, then impact. As the bomblets erupt in a stream of fireballs, McClure aims his camera from his window at the blazing city. He glances upward, then quickly lowers his camera as 6 zeros fly overhead. He grabs the mic.
6 waiter, just above and to the right. Have you got him, Thatcher?
Ready for them, sir.
Thatcher sits ready at his turret as the zeros soar overhead in two groups of three. McClure, Davenport, and Lawson eye the enemy planes.
Why don't they dive?
As the crew watches, the zeros bank and fly off.
They're going away.
Lawson grips the wheel.
We're looking away for them to come back. We're getting out of here.
As Clever watches through the nose canopy, the ruptured duck accelerates over the harbor and out to sea. In the cockpit, Davenport leans toward Lawson.
Well, I guess maybe we're in that lucky hat.
Not yet. Not till we get to China.
They fly low over the water. Later, Lawson rubs his head and massages his temples as Davenport grips the control wheel.
Wow! What a headache.
Behind the cockpit, McClure leans on his hand over his work. Clever glances over the navigator's shoulder, then reaches for a cigarette. Thatcher crawls forward through the narrow passage from the tail and sticks his head into their compartment.
Were you scared?
I'm still scared.
McClure, on our course?
On our course.
McClure flashes Lawson the OK signal, and the pilot returns his hands to the wheel. Davenport lets go of his side, then glances at the control panel.
160 gallons. I hope it's enough to get us to Changchow.
Yeah, and I hope the Japs don't get there first.
Clever and McClure glance anxiously at Lawson. Later, raindrops splatter against the cockpit canopy. Davenport and Lawson exchange a look. Thatcher nervously peers out at the sudden downpour. In the nose, Clever peers through the wet canopy into the rain. Lawson's brow furrows.
What's the dope, McClure?
McClure takes his mic.
About 200 miles to Changchow.
We ought to get the coast any minute.
We'll never find it in the dark.
Davenport shakes his head.
Pilot to crew, we're going up and fly in an instrument. When the gas is gone, we'll bail out.
McClure and Thatcher quickly grab their parachutes and strap the packs around their waist. As rain pelts against the canopy, Clever leans close to the fogged surface. In the cockpit, Lawson and Davenport squint into the clouded sky. Behind them, Thatcher glances nervously from the window to the pilots. As thick clouds block their view, Lawson grimaces and Davenport squints. Davenport taps Lawson on the shoulder and points forward. A rocky coastline lies ahead.
horizon. Maybe we can land. Keep a lookout for rocks or logs.
In the nose, Clever peers down at the crashing waves. As Thatcher looks out his window, pelting rain streams down the glass. In the cockpit, the two pilots stare through the scattered clouds at the beach below. Lawson frowns, then grabs his mic.
All set for landing. McClure, get our guns out. Take off chutes and be sure your life jackets are on. Carry your guns. Wheels down, flaps down.
Clever takes off his backpack and headset. Davenport checks the gauges.
Airspeed 135. 130.
Clever braces himself.
110.
Lawson stares intently ahead. Lawson exchanges a panicked look with Davenport, then grips the control wheel as the ruptured duct plummets down into the water. Now, on the moonlit coastline, a wing torn from its fuselage floats in the tide. Rain pelts the tail of the ruptured duct, which juts out of the water at a 45-degree angle. Two gun barrels aim skyward from the gunner's canopy. Below the Army Star insignia on the fuselage, the waves break against the wet sand. Lawson's white scarf floats past. Nearby, Lawson makes his way through the water, his wet hair clinging to his scalp. The scarf floats closer, revealing two initials sewn in large dark letters, TL. It sinks into the murky water. As the white-capped waves push the pilot closer to the rocky shore, driving rain pelts the sand. Lawson struggles in the raging water and pulls himself forward onto the beach. Crawling arm over arm in the sand, Lawson drags himself onto the rocky shore. Another wave washes up over his drenched jacket and pants, then retreats, revealing his bare left foot. As he creeps forward, his bare foot drags listlessly in the wet sand. Moving further up the beach, he inches toward a large rock. Grimacing, he grabs the rock, then braces against it and pulls himself up to his feet. Lawson turns to look at the ruptured duct. Rain pelts his face. With his inflated life vest still around his neck, Lawson staggers forward, staring at the crashed plane.
I lost my ship. I lost my ship.
Lawson stumbles back as another limping form makes its way down the shore toward him. Lawson recognizes Clever and staggers over. He grabs the bombardier's shoulders. Clever grabs Lawson's arms and the two men stare at each other, squinting in the rain.
You hurt bad? I don't know.
Nearby, another crewman kneels face down in the water. He rocks on his knees, struggling to stand. Lawson goes to his side and helps McClure out of the water. The navigator's arms hang lifeless at his side.
I can't move my arms.
As Lawson supports McClure and walks him to shore, Thatcher crawls from the water on his hands and knees. Lawson limps to his side. As McClure staggers to the rock and drops to his knees, Lawson and the dazed Thatcher join him, collapsing by his side. A few yards away, Davenport strains against another boulder.
Your leg! It's all busted up, sir! Get Davenport!
Thatcher sloshes to Davenport's side.
Hey!
As Thatcher helps the co-pilot toward the others, Davenport limps along slowly, his right leg dragging behind him. Davenport's life jacket dangles from his neck. He collapses on his face in front of the rest of the crew. Thatcher, on his knees, surveys the four injured men. He moves around the rock and uses his life jacket like a pillow for McClure, who has passed out on the stony surface. He returns and pushes Davenport closer to the others, then leans Clever against the rock. With the rest of the crew huddled together, Thatcher lies close to Davenport. Lawson stares skyward, blood streaking down his face. As he blinks under the pelting rain, our view of his face slowly fades. He remembers Ellen in his arms, wearing a soft house coat with a frilly collar.
Dead. Look at me. That baby and I, we won't ever need anything. We mustn't either of us be scared about it, Dad. Because the baby's why I know you're coming back to us.
Still huddled with his crew against the rock, Lawson opens his eyes. He pulls himself up and starts to stagger away.
Whoa!
Lawson!
Lawson stops and turns to Thatcher. He wavers on his feet, then hobbles back and sits on the rock. Thatcher sits up on the sand and looks about, then widens his eyes and fixes his gaze in the distance. His pained grimace shifts to alarm. He gapes and quickly draws his gun and aims it.
I shoot them, Lieutenant?
The four men all stare at Thatcher's target. On a hill above them, eight men emerge from behind a boulder wearing bulky clothes and wide-brimmed hats. One man carries a staff.
No, hold it. But they may be Japs, sir.
Don't shoot, Thatcher. Hey!
The strangers make their way down the rocky path, eyes fixed on the wounded men. Three men approach cautiously, stepping through the muddy puddles. They stoop to examine the injured crew, then motion for the others to aid them. A big man faces Lawson.
Chinga! Chinga!
He says he's Chinese.
What's that word for man?
The Chinese men gather up the injured crew and carry them off. Now, inside a rustic straw hut, Chinese women and children look on as Thatcher bends over McClure. Grimacing, McClure doubles over, then slumps forward unconscious. Thatcher carries an oil lamp to Lawson, then lifts aside the pilot's torn pant leg. Thatcher gapes at Lawson's injured leg.
Well, that leg's got to be sewn up, sir. It's split wide open.
Thatcher turns to the door. One man pulls open its lattice flap, admitting a stern young soldier wearing an ammunition bandolier across his chest. Several other armed men in uniform follow. Thatcher eyes the man. Thatcher points to himself. The stern-faced man looks at Thatcher, then scans the other Americans. McClure lies face down on a bed of straw. As the stern soldier kneels over McClure, a thin soldier stands behind him with a rifle. Moving from one to another, the stern leader quickly examines each crewman. He comes to Lawson and carefully scrutinizes the brass U.S. collar insignias on his jacket, lifting them into the dim light and turning them in his hand. He goes to Davenport and inspects his collar, then turns to the thin soldier behind him. The thin soldier stands over Lawson, then produces a cigarette and places it between Lawson's lips. The pilot smiles up at him. He gives Davenport a cigarette and lights it with the oil lamp. As Davenport takes a long drag, the thin soldier lights Lawson's. He then turns to the standing Thatcher, places a cigarette in his mouth, and lights it. Thatcher grins broadly as the thin soldier steps aside. The stern-faced soldier steps before Lawson.
Me, Charlie.
Thatcher quickly moves closer.
Americans.
We're Americans.
We're Americans.
American.
We need a doctor and some help to get to Chiang Chau. Chiang Kai-shek. We're his friends. In Chongqing.
Chongqing?
Yes.
That's right. We go Chongqing.
Chongqing, many, many days. Many.
Doctor.
Charlie. Go doctor. Charlie, bring doctor here.
Charlie, bring doctor. Or we die.
Doctor? Wan Li.
Wan Li? That's a Chinese mile.
Wan Li. Go. Bring doctor.
Doctor. Japanese man. Japanese doctor.
Maybe Japanese man. Japanese soldier. Come here.
Japanese man. No come at night.
Charlie smiles and nods reassuringly. Daytime. On a ridge above terraced rice fields, a line of several dozen Chinese carry the injured Americans on stretchers suspended between long wooden poles. Later, they caravan up a steep mountain path, then descend the mountain with the poles on their shoulders. Charlie leads the way. He stops and peers ahead, then lifts his arm and the convoy halts.
Chun!
Below them, a Chinese junk sails into an inlet. Charlie points it out.
Boat! You go!
boat.
A patrol boat speeds toward the junk.
Take out, take out!
Lawson grimaces as his porters quickly set down the stretcher. Charlina's men take cover behind boulders, aiming their guns. The Japanese patrol boat circles in front of the junk, cutting it off. Charlie watches as its soldiers board the civilian craft and search it. Davenport lifts his head and strains to look. The Japanese complete their search, then climb back into their own boat, seating themselves around the boat's two large machine guns. As they motor off, Charlie stands and watches. The Chinese again lift the stretchers and proceed down the mountain path to the junk. As they arrive, a man at the stern hoists a Japanese flag. The Chinese lower the stretchers near the water's edge. They pick up Lawson and carry him to the junk, supporting his back and injured legs. Lawson grimaces as the men lift him onto the deck. Next, Clever, McClure, and Davenport are brought aboard the small boat. Thatcher climbs over the hull. Charlie strides through the shallow water to the junk. He joins Thatcher under a canopied shelter where Lawson and the others have been placed. He looks at the wounded men lying on the floor. He grins at Thatcher, then reaches for Thatcher's pistol.
Hey, cut that out!
Charlie sits beside Thatcher, eyes locked, then sadly shakes his head. He removes his own pistol from its holster and shows it to the wary American. He pulls out the clip and removes a bullet. He holds it up to Thatcher with a smile and a nod. Thatcher takes it, then turns to Lawson.
I think he wants to trade bullets with you, Thatcher.
Charlie nods. Oh. Thatcher pulls a clip from his pistol grip and the two men trade bullets.
Flynn!
Charlie holds up the bullet.
Charlie! Flynn! Charlie Gold! Charlie Flynn!
Sure, Charlie Flynn! Goodbye, Charlie!
Lawson's crew watches as Charlie leaves. Now the junk moves slowly out of the inlet. As Thatcher holsters his pistol, Clever slumps over onto Davenport. Thatcher helps him back onto the cot.
Japs must be all around us.
I wonder where the rest of the gang is.
Scattered all over the China coast. If they're alive.
Lawson jostles about as the junk yaws sharply. Perspiration dampening his face, he blinks and winces.
I think I'm gonna pass out.
His eyes close. In a flashback, Lawson stands in dress uniform beside Ellen.
Wife.
To be my lawfully wedded wife.
To have and to cherish.
To have and to cherish.
Until death, us do part.
He gazes into Ellen's eyes.
Until death, us do part. Until death, us do part.
Back in the junk, his bruised head rocks back and forth.
Please, don't let him cut my leg off.
Don't let him cut my leg off!
Lawson.
Davenport shakes him.
Don't.
Lawson.
Lawson opens his eyes and faces Davenport.
You were yelling.
Later, the Chinese men steer the flat-bottom junk along a narrow waterway, pushing off the river bottom with long poles. On shore, they carry the Americans to allies who wait with stretchers. A man wearing a straw hat hands a bamboo parasol to Thatcher and bows.
Thank you.
As Thatcher starts to walk away, he spots a bomber soaring low. Everyone takes cover. Chinese soldiers stand with rifles ready, watching the sky. Others carry the Americans into the forest on stretchers. Later, in a village, they parade down a narrow road, past a basket shop, and waving civilians. McClure winces as his stretcher jostles about. A flag marked with a medical cross hangs by a doorway. The group heads through it. As they enter a courtyard, the carriers set down the stretchers. A Chinese man in a three-piece suit comes out to meet them, along with three nurses in plain cotton dresses. He addresses the group.
My name is Fu Ling. Everything we have is yours. We know what you have done, and we honor you for it.
Our navigator has both his shoulders broken. Is there anybody who can set them for him?
No one. But we hope that help will soon arrive for you. Ba Tai Men,
The nurses rush to the wounded American soldiers. Inside, McClure, both arms in slings, sips tea held by an old man. Nearby, Thatcher pours Davenport tea from a kettle.
Thanks.
The young bombardier carries the kettle to Clever, who sleeps on a cot. Thatcher sits beside him and unzips his friend's jacket. As Fu Ling treats Lawson's leg, a nurse cleans a cut on his hand.
How are they?
Fu Ling glances at the other patients.
We have washed them. They are bandaged. But we have no medicines. Not even aspirin.
Lawson frowns.
What's that?
Fu Ling rises as a young man wearing a suit and glasses comes in. The young man strides toward the patients, glancing at them. He sets down his umbrella and hat at Lawson's cot.
This is Dr. Chung.
How do you do?
We've come a long way. We're going home now. And we've been hunting a doctor everywhere.
I understand.
Thatcher rushes over.
Have you got anything that'll knock him out, Doctor?
They're in awful pain.
We hope to have some medical supplies by the time we reach my father's hospital.
Hospital? Where's that?
In Linhai, about 60 li from here. I have come to take you there.
It's a funny thing, Doctor. There were a lot of planes, and we had to take off early. You see how it was.
Of course. They aren't in any shape to make much of a trip, Doctor.
We'll have to move them at once. The Japanese captured one of your crews yesterday, not very far from here.
So many planes. We don't know what happened to the others.
Dr. Chung faces Lawson.
All up and down the Chinese coast, my countrymen are seeking your countrymen. We'll bring them through.
He turns to Fu Ling. Dr. Chung strides to the door. Lawson reaches up and tugs the sleeve of Fu Ling's jacket.
I have some money. I want to give it to you.
Please, Lieutenant. You have given us enough already.
What?
The bombs you dropped on Japan. Please now, try to rest.
Men and women in simple dress fill the room. They pick up the Americans using their cots as stretchers and carry them out. An elderly woman sitting in an adjoining alcove watches, tears streaming from her dark eyes. Now, in the pitch of night, the men transport the Americans up a mountain road. Dr. Chung dabs Lawson's sweaty face as he walks alongside his stretcher. In the distance, smoke billows from a large fire.
The Japanese. They are in the village we just left.
Chung turns to the head of the convoy.
Choba!
They hurry on. Later, the convoy approaches a building's porch. An older couple stands to greet Dr. Chung.
Parker. Mrs. Parker.
Chung.
Mrs. Parker, a matronly woman wearing a sweater, looks at the Americans as their stretchers are lowered, then turns to Chung.
How are they?
They are very, very sick. I'll need your help.
How close are the Japanese?
They took Qingming 3 hours after our departure. One of the American crews has already fallen into their hands.
Well, hadn't they better be taken straight through to Hopsi?
They couldn't stand the trip.
Inside, a Chinese man with a long goatee descends a staircase. At the bottom of the stairs, he watches as Thatcher and several nurses tend to the injured Americans. Wearing a mandarin-collared vest over a long tunic, the old man surveys the wounded. Dr. Chung approaches him. He follows Dr. Chung to Lawson's side. The old man bows and pulls up his sleeves.
This is my father, Dr. Chung.
He unwraps his bandages.
The others, please help them.
Please don't worry, Lieutenant. We'll take care of everybody.
Chung turns to his father. Dr. Chung faces Lawson.
You won't have to take it off, will you, Doc?
We hope not. One cannot tell. You've had a long journey. Now, you must rest.
Mr. Parker talks with Thatcher.
All we had at our mission was a little antiseptic fluid and some bandages. But we sent out runners for supplies.
Is there any way I could get a message out? I'd like my mother to know that I'm okay.
The whole region's swarming with Japanese.
Well, do you think they've heard back in the States what happened to us?
We've been listening in on shortwave. They know all about the raid, but apparently they're keeping the details secret until the rest of your men have been saved.
And they found any of the others?
We have word that one crew will be coming through here pretty soon now. I understand there's a doctor among them.
That must be Lieutenant Smith's crew. Excuse me.
Thatcher goes to Lawson.
Lieutenant Smith's crew has been rescued, sir.
Smith's?
They found Lieutenant Smith and Doc White, and they're coming here.
Don Smith's crew? The Doc was flying with Don Smith. They'll be here any minute now.
His gaze darts about.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, the way Clever's head just keeps rocking back and forth, back and forth. Somebody ought to help Clever.
The two doctors exchange a worried look. Now, children peer through the hospital windows. Inside, McClure and Clever rest on cots wearing pajamas and smoking cigarettes.
I think the Chinese are a swell bunch of people, but I can't say I go for their music.
Shorty Match, you go all to pieces if you heard a little of this.
Yeah.
Thatcher enters with towels.
How's Lawson? Well, his leg looks pretty bad, sir. Dr. Jung thinks gangrene has set in.
Thatcher rushes to the window and steps through it, joining the children outside. He looks up at the sky, then turns to his friends.
Looks like a Jap Zero.
Clever limps quickly to the window, then looks back at McClure, who lies with his useless arms folded on a board across his cot. In another hospital room, Davenport stands on a balcony and watches the sky. Inside, Lawson lies in bed, his legs suspended in traction. Davenport staggers toward him using two canes and sits in a chair beside his cot. Lawson stares at the ceiling.
You guys ought to go on and leave me. They think I'm passed out half the time. And I hear what they say. The Japs are coming closer all the time. Why don't you guys go?
We're not sticking around here because of you, Lawson. None of us here are able to travel yet.
I was just thinking. I guess Ellen and I aren't going to ski anymore. That's too bad. I was going to teach you some fancy stuff.
Now, don't start talking like that. You're going to pull through all right.
What do you think a girl would do? I mean, say Ellen and I like to ski. It'd be kind of funny if they cut my leg off, wouldn't it?
Why don't you try to go to sleep?
Yeah, it'll be kind of funny, all right. Marry a guy. He's got two arms and two legs. Then he comes back and he hasn't any.
Now, Chinese soldiers escort a convoy to the hospital. A crowd of villagers gather around the Americans as their stretchers are set down. Don greets the two doctors. Don and Doc enter Clever and McClure's room, followed by the rest of the crew.
Here they are.
Hello, Sarge.
Good to see you.
Holy Joe, what happened to you guys?
Nothing serious. The duck forgot the duck.
Yeah, McClure's been trying to do his own flying ever since.
It really looks like something left over from a massacre.
Well, you guys don't look so good yourselves.
You don't smell so good either. There's nothing wrong with us that a good bath won't fix. I wish we could say the same for you.
How's the grub around here? I think I'd like a good thick steak, French fried onions, and a baked potato with plenty of butter, and about three bottles of beer and...
Thatcher pats his shoulder.
You take bean sprouts and like them.
Say, where's Lawson and Davenport?
They're upstairs. Lawson's in pretty bad shape.
You better go up and see him. He needs you bad, Doc.
Doc hurries off.
Well, it's certainly good to see you fellows again.
Don turns to old Dr. Chung.
Hey, Pop, how's the chop suey around here?
Chung rubs his brow.
He doesn't speak English.
Chung laughs with the soldiers.
Long story.
Now, Don and Lawson lie on two adjacent beds. Doc stands between them, siphoning Don's blood to Lawson.
Yeah. And when Shorty jumped, he had two 45s, a 44 rifle, a 22 automatic, that Luger of his, a hunting knife, a boy knife, and an axe.
What a guy.
He stuffed his shirt full of chocolate bars, but he forgot to button his collar. So when he pulled the ripcord, he just naturally molted candy all over North China.
What happened to his phonograph?
He went down with the ship. Next morning, man scared the Chinese right out of their wits. They didn't know anything human grew that tall.
What about Bob Gray?
He's okay. I think they moved on to Chungking. Oh, yeah, and that guy, me, Charlie, said to tell you hello.
If it hadn't been for Charlie, the Japs would have had us that first day.
Yeah, us too.
I'd like to come back someday and fight alongside that guy.
Me too.
Well, it's all over. Let's save some of this talk for tomorrow.
Doc removes Don's tubing.
Point and a half, that's not bad. You better get to bed now.
You're no grandma, Doc.
As Don gets to his feet, he wobbles slightly.
But I'll take it slow just as a favor to you.
Doc keeps working.
Be seeing you, Lawson.
Don leaves.
Thanks, Doc.
Doc wipes Lawson's arm with a cotton ball.
How's the leg, Doc?
It's not good, Lawson. The next 48 hours will tell the story.
Now, outside, a woman hands a package to Don.
Hey, Don!
Yeah?
Tell Doolittle to hold off that party till we get there.
Okay, Davenport, we'll wait for you. Where's Thatcher?
He's in with Lawson. He'll be right out.
In Lawson's room.
I wish you would let me stay here until you're ready to go, sir.
These people will take care of us. There's no reason for you fellas to hang around and maybe get caught.
I know, but I might come in handy if the Japs show up, sir.
Lawson shakes his head.
Thatcher, when you get back to the States, if you should run into my wife, just tell her I'm okay. Don't let her know about anything being wrong.
Thatcher nods.
I understand, sir.
As Thatcher's furrowed brow relaxes, the two men shake hands.
And say hello for me to that girl in Billings.
That I will, sir. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Thatcher.
Thatcher slowly releases Lawson's hand and leaves. Later.
Are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
As the convoy leaves the village, the Parkers and two dozen villagers wave goodbye. Davenport, McClure, and Clever watch sadly from the window of their hospital room. Now, Doc enters Lawson's room with Dr. Chung and his father. A nurse with them carries a tray of medical supplies.
Good morning.
Morning, Lawson.
Lawson cringes as Doc takes his leg out of the sling.
Try not to hurt you, Lawson. Have a look at this.
Taking a pair of scissors from the tray, Doc cuts through the bandages. Young Dr. Chung dabs Lawson's perspiring brow.
Thanks.
Slowly raising his head, Lawson looks down at his leg. Old Dr. Chung looks on as Doc peels away the bandages. They exchange a grave look. Lawson breathes heavily.
You gonna take the leg, Doc?
Doc looks at him.
Yeah, I think so. We talked it over and there's nothing else to do.
Lawson's eyes shift nervously.
It's pretty rough to have to cut a man's leg off.
Well, I guess it'll be all right. After all, a wooden leg is just kind of like wearing a shoe with a high instep.
He forces a smile.
When are you gonna do it?
I might as well give you a shot right now.
You mean we have something to knock me out?
Our runners arrived with anesthetic this morning.
It'll only be a spinal, Lawson. You won't feel anything from the waist down, but you'll be conscious. That's the best we can do.
Oh, swell. I can watch you and make sure you don't take off too much.
He forces another smile.
All right, Lawson, we'll have to roll you over.
Old Dr. Chung watches Lawson somberly through his round, wire-framed glasses. Lawson stares blankly as Doc turns him onto his side and feels along his back. The old doctor opens the door and motions for two other men to come in.
It'll take a little time to work. We'll get you over to the operating room.
The two men carry in a stretcher. Doc and the young Dr. Chung gently lift Lawson onto it. Later, in an operating room, the doctors and nurses prepare their instruments as Lawson lies on a table.
Doc.
Yes?
How high are you going to cut?
Not too high.
Will I have a knee, Doc?
I'm afraid not, Lawson. Any feeling there?
No. Look, Doc.
We can't waste any time, Lawson. The minute anesthetic wears off, we haven't got any more.
Okay, but just one thing more.
Yes?
If anything happens, don't let Ella know anything about the operation. She might just as well think I died all in one piece.
All right, Lawson. Now, you're not going to feel this, but, well, you might get nervous and jump or something, so the nurses are going to hold you.
Okay, Doc. Fire away.
As the nurses hold Lawson's shoulders down, he lifts his head and watches Doc prepare the incision. With a deep breath, he sets his head back down.
Oh, when you said no knee, you weren't kidding.
If I cut any lower, we might have to do it again. Your system couldn't take it.
As the doctors proceed, a nurse dabs Lawson's forehead.
What are you stalling for, Doc?
We're doing the best we can, Lawson. Take it easy.
Okay, only hurry. Seems like I'm beginning to feel my other leg.
Doc motions his head to old Dr. Chung, who moves behind Lawson and places both hands firmly on his shoulders.
Seems like I can move my toes, Doc.
Old Dr. Chung and the nurses focus on the trembling patient.
I think I can move my ankle. Hurry, Doc. I'm sure I can.
Lawson shakes under their grasp.
Hurry, Doc, hurry!
His sweaty face trembling, Lawson stares wide-eyed. Now, in a flashback, Lawson leans against a window in a rustic cabin, gripping a phone. Outside, two men saw a tree.
Hello?
Hello, hello, Ellen?
Ted, where are you?
I'm in a lumber camp. Had to make a forced landing in a mud puddle.
You aren't hurt, are you?
No, not a scratch. Have you got the tree all fixed?
Ellen sits at a table with a Christmas tree
you
on it.
Just see it. It's so beautiful.
Anything under it?
Oh, yes.
Well, let's open them up.
We can't do that.
Sure we can. Go ahead.
Well, if you say so.
I'm not going to be cheated out of my Christmas by a cracked up airplane.
Oh, Ted, it's the most beautiful box of candy I've ever seen in my whole life.
Good. Isn't there maybe something else lying around?
Let's see. Yes, there is.
Well, open it.
It's a silk scarf. And it looks like it's handmade, too.
I bet it's got my initials on it.
That's not fair. You peeked while I was making it.
I just know my wife.
Oh, Ted, I wish you were here.
So do I, honey.
I'll be thinking of you tonight. I'll sit in front of the tree and turn the radio on to Christmas carols. Just think of you.
The two men in the snow fell their tree, and Lawson turns to look. Back in his hospital room, he opens his eyes and stares off blankly. Now, children in scouting uniform stand in a line behind an upstairs railing. Below the scouts, a large audience fills the main room of the hospital. Dozens of villagers watch through the windows from outside. The crowd includes the Parkers, the two Chung doctors, and the American soldiers. Gathered around tables covered with baskets of food, everyone lifts their eyes to the children. McClure stands, his arms held out in front of him, supported by splints. Clever solemnly stares up with a patch of gauze taped across his forehead. The children sing with serious faces, their focus on the Americans below. Doc stands behind Davenport, who swallows hard. Nearby, Lawson gazes upward, his eyes pooling with tears. As McClure and a few others take their seats, Lawson nods.
Thank you. And thank you, Scouts. I mean, all the fellows would like to thank you very much for everything.
Dr. Chung translates. Their hosts and the scouts bow politely. Old Dr. Chung hands his son a bracelet and they approach Lawson.
Lieutenant, my father has asked me to present this to you. It has been in our family since the 15th century. Father begs me to tell you that beauty belongs to beauty, and ask that you honor him by presenting it to your wife.
Lawson looks from the old doctor to the bracelet, then accepts the gift.
Thank you. Thank you.
He turns to the young doctor.
I didn't know that you knew about Ellen, my wife.
You spoke of her a number of times.
Nearby, Mrs. Parker translates Chinese embroidered on two robes.
It says, "This is an American hero who has bombed Japan. Whenever he goes among the people of China, let him be accorded respect and honor."
As Davenport smiles proudly, a ragged man rushes in with a stack of parcels.
He has just come from Khao Chai. Another one of your crews has been captured, and the Japanese are moving in this direction.
I think Lawson will be able to travel in a couple of days.
There's nothing wrong with me, Doc. I can travel right now.
I'm afraid a couple of days would be too long.
The thin, ragged man grins at the young doctor. Chung presents him to the Americans.
This is Wang Zong. He has walked all the way from his native village of Khao Chai, and he begs the honor of presenting gifts to his American allies.
Smiling broadly, Wang gives a parcel to Doc, then Davenport.
Thank you.
He approaches Clever, who munches on an apple. Grinning, Wang bows and hands him a parcel.
Okay.
Thank
you. Wang turns to McClure, whose arms are in traction. A nurse takes the gift for him.
Thank you very much.
Wang approaches Lawson.
Okay.
Thank you.
Handing the bracelet to a nurse, Lawson takes his present. Unwrapping it, he smiles at the old man. As he removes a pair of slippers from the wrapping, his smile fades. Wong looks down to the floor and spots Lawson's one leg. He slowly covers his face in his hands. Lawson reaches up and lowers them.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Lawson shakes his hand and a little smile returns to Wong's face. The old man hurries out with his head bowed, averting his eyes from the others. Lawson watches him go.
He felt a lot worse than I did.
Setting aside the left slipper, Lawson reaches down to his one foot. The nurse removes his old straw slipper and slides on the new one. Lawson smiles down at the snug-fitting slipper, then reaches for a crutch. The nurse hands him a second crutch, and Lawson uses them to push himself up. As he tucks them under his arms, the others gather around him. They watch as he takes a couple of hesitant steps.
There, I can get along pretty well already.
I should say very well for your first day out of bed.
He takes two more steps, then teeters backwards. Mr. Parker rushes to catch him.
Guess I'll have to be a little more careful. I don't ever want anybody to see me do that.
Parker helps him back to his chair.
I don't want anybody to see me like a new light.
Now, outside the hospital, rain pours down.
Lieutenant White, word just came. The American plane will pick you up in Chang Chau tomorrow afternoon at 5.
Wonderful.
Jesse Bukai Bukai either. What's it on, Robin?
He says we don't hurry. The Japanese will get there first.
Lawson faces the Parkers.
When are you leaving?
We're going to stay here. We're quite used to it, you know. Here, this may come in handy.
Thank you. You and Mr. Parker have done so much for us, and we'll never forget it.
Goodbye, Lawson.
Goodbye.
Good luck.
Thank you, sir.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
God bless you.
The two Dr. Chungs approach.
My father wishes me to tell you that you have honored us with your visit and that he will offer prayers for your safe return to America.
Isn't he coming along with us?
Father feels that he must stay with his people. They will need him here. 我们现在走吧.
Goodbye, sir.
As Lawson shakes old Dr. Chung's hand, four men lift his stretcher onto their shoulders. A dozen villagers watch under their umbrellas as the soldiers' stretchers are carried off. Old Dr. Chung stares after them from behind his wire-rimmed glasses. Now, a twin-engine American plane approaches an open airfield surrounded by Chinese soldiers. As it lands, men carry the American stretchers to the edge of the airstrip. Dr. Chung and the American soldiers gather around by the plane's open door.
Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, sir.
Goodbye, Doc. And thanks for everything.
I hope, sir, that we may meet again.
That goes double, Doc.
Goodbye, Doctor, and thank you.
Thank you.
If you ever come to the States, Doctor, look me up, will you? I'll be in the Portland telephone directory.
With pleasure.
Goodbye, Doctor.
I have one sorrow, Lieutenant, that we did not have the medicine to ease your pain.
You saved my life, Doc.
I hope someday you will come back to us.
We'll be back. Maybe not us ourselves, but a lot of guys like us. And I'd like to be with them. You're our kind of people.
Thank you, sir. And goodbye.
On his crutches, Lawson follows the others to the plane. A soldier manning the plane helps Lawson aboard while Davenport holds his crutches. As the Chinese men start to leave with the empty stretchers, Dr. Chung waves goodbye to the Americans. The soldiers grin back at him through the plane's small square windows. The young doctor salutes the plane as it takes off and banks toward the mountains. Later, at night, the plane presses on through a cloudy sky. Inside, Lawson sits beside one of his sleeping crewmen. Wide awake, he looks around the cabin. As the others in the cabin sleep, Lawson gets up on his crutches and makes his way to the cockpit door. Davenport wakes up and watches Lawson open the door, hop inside, and close the door behind him. Grinning, Lawson stands behind the pilot and studies the small cockpit. He leans in closer. Pilot turns to him.
Hello. Go ahead, sit down.
Thank you.
Lawson maneuvers himself into the empty co-pilot's seat. The pilot glances from the dark sky in front of them to Lawson's childlike smile.
I know how you feel. Take it for a while.
Thanks.
Lawson looks at the control wheel and slowly puts his hands on it. He peers ahead with a serene smile as the plane floats above the moonlit clouds. The pilot studies his face, then slides his window open and takes a deep breath.
Smell that?
Lawson breathes in and nods.
That's America. That's the USA.
He takes another breath.
Every time I make a trip back, she smells better and better.
Yeah. I think I know what you mean.
I'm from Pittsburgh. I know it may seem screwy to you, but it seems to me as if I can smell some of that coal smoke right off the old Monongahela River. That sound crazy?
No. I'm from California, and I can smell orange blossoms.
Oh, it couldn't be. That's too far. I must come from Florida.
Oh, if you want flavor, you've got to have a California orange. But for smelling, Florida's just as good.
Lawson looks out in front of him, and his smile fades. Now, in a quaint living room, a piece of paper with a single star centered on it hangs in a window. A woman in a cotton print dress enters, wiping her hands on a dish towel.
Hello? Yes. What's that? Just a minute. Ellen! Yes. Ellen Washington on the phone.
Ellen rushes through the living room's curtained doorway wearing a maternity smock. She picks up the phone.
Hello?
Her mother looks on.
Yes, this is Mrs. Lawson.
Ellen smiles.
Oh, hello, Colonel. I mean General Doolittle. Oh, yes, I'm fine, thank you. No, not a bit excited, General. Oh, he's back, Mother. Ted's back. He's back. Oh, yes, General. How is he?
Ellen's smile fades. Gripping the phone cord, she listens with a furrowed brow.
Oh, yes. I understand. Of course I do. Yes, I'll be ready. I know. Oh, that's so nice of you, General. Yes, thank you. Oh, yes, thank you, General. Thank you.
Ellen hangs up the phone and stares ahead with pained eyes. She turns to her mother and they hold each other. Her mother gently pats her shoulder.
Just cry, darling. Cry it out.
Ellen pulls back to face her.
He said it this morning, Mother. General Doolittle just saw him, so it's true. General Doolittle's sending a plane ticket for me. Dad doesn't want to see me. He doesn't want to see me because he's lost his leg, and he doesn't even want me to know it's happened until he gets a new leg, learns how to use it. As if it would make any difference. As if anything would make any difference to me as long as he's alive. I'm going to see him.
Ellen cries into her mother's shoulder. The older woman grips Ellen's arms and looks into her daughter's eyes.
Well, that means we have to get your clothes ready in a hurry, hmm?
She releases Ellen and walks toward the bedroom. Ellen follows.
Have my things come back from the cleaners yet? Uh-huh. Let's see, I'll take this suit. Oh, my blue coat. He always liked it best.
Her smile fades.
Oh, I can't take any of these things. I can't take any of my pretty clothes. They don't fit me anymore.
Do you think Ted's going to pay any attention to what kind of clothes you wear or how you look?
He always did. Oh, Mother, I'm scared.
There's nothing to be frightened about. Lots of people lose a leg or arm and continue living perfectly normal lives.
I'm not scared about Ted. I'm scared about me.
About you?
Well, you see, well, most husbands and wives are together while things are changing. And husbands get used to things like that because, well, they're around. Ted's been gone all this time, and when he went away, I was so slim, and all the time he's been gone, he's been thinking of me like that.
Ted loves you, Ellen. You love him. That's why neither of you is going to notice any change when you meet him.
Do you think so, Mother?
I know so.
They share a smile, and Ellen's mother kisses her on the cheek. As Ellen starts back to the closet, she holds her coat in front of her pregnant stomach.
All the same, if I held my coat like this when I walk into the room, don't you think it would hide me? Just a little?
Now, an officer's hand knocks on a door. He goes in. Lawson spins in his wheelchair to face him. It's Doolittle.
Hello, Lawson.
Lawson tries to stand.
How are you feeling?
Pretty good, sir.
You look fine.
Thank you, sir. Won't you sit down, sir?
Yeah, thanks. Well, got any plans?
About what, sir?
Well, about the future. Have you decided what you're going to do?
Not particularly, sir. I always wanted to be an aeronautical engineer. I suppose I'll start studying again. After they muster me out.
Who said they'd muster you out?
Well, I won't be much use to anybody with it.
What are you talking about? You think we'd let a man of your experience get away from us?
Lawson's face brightens.
Well, that's fine, sir. Thank you.
Don't thank me.
He glances at Lawson's leg.
I just happened to think of something, Lawson.
Yes, sir.
What about your wife? Does she know you're back?
No, sir.
Why not?
Well, I thought I'd wait till I get my new leg and my scars fixed up. It won't be so much of a shock to her that way.
Shock? What kind of a girl did you marry, anyway?
She's okay, sir. She's a fine girl.
Well, then she deserves to know. She deserves to see you, too.
No, no, sir. If you don't mind, I'd rather wait. When I see Ellen again, I'm going to be all dressed up and have a new leg. And I'm going to take her out to the best place in town. And I'm going to dance with her.
Doolittle studies him.
That may be quite a while, Lawson.
No, sir. You see, I'm getting along fine. In a month or two...
In a month or two, you'll be back at work. Hard work.
Doolittle stands.
Well, I'll try to drop in on you again, Lawson.
They shake hands.
I hope you can, sir.
Bye.
Goodbye, sir.
Lawson's eyes follow Doolittle as he strides to the door. The general turns back to Lawson.
Your wife's going to have a baby, isn't she?
Yes, sir.
Hat in hand, Doolittle steps back into the hospital room.
I've got a couple of kids myself, both in the service.
He smiles briefly.
You know, Lawson, if my kids and all the other kids who are in this thing could fix it so this would really be the last one, your kid would get quite a break, wouldn't he?
He sure would, sir.
They exchange a proud smile, and Doolittle turns to leave. A pensive look crosses Lawson's face as he leans on his wheelchair's armrest. He stares at the crutches beside him, then turns his attention to the door. Ellen enters with her coat draped on her arm in front of her. Lawson gapes. Ellen smiles, standing in the open doorway. Lawson slowly starts to push himself up from the chair, keeping his eyes focused on his wife.
I just had to come.
Lawson tries to stand and falls to the ground.
Ted, let me help you.
No, you'll hurt the baby.
As they crouch together on the floor, they kiss passionately. Lawson plants several kisses on Ellen's cheek, and they smile into each other's eyes.
When things were worst, when there didn't seem to be any chance at all, I could see your face, your beautiful face.
He kisses her, and she pulls him close.
I knew you were coming home, Ted.
They grin at each other.
Tell me, honey, how come you're so cute?
I had to be, if I was going to get such a good-looking fella.
They embrace. Now, over a map of Southeast Asia, words appear. The end. Credits. Crew of the Ruptured Duck. Van Johnson as Ted Lawson. Robert Walker as David Thatcher. Tim Murdoch as Dean Davenport. Don DeFore as Charles McClure. Gordon McDonnell as Bob Clever. Phyllis Thaxter as Ellen Lawson. Horace McNally as Doc White. John R. Riley as Shorty Manch. Robert Mitchum as Bob Gray. Scott McKay as Davy Jones. Donald Curtis as Lieutenant Randall. Louis Jean Height as Lieutenant Miller. William Bill Phillips as Don Smith. Douglas Cowan as Brick Holstrom. Paul Langton as Captain Ski York. Leon Ames as Lieutenant Jerica. Bill Williams as Bud Felton. With Robert Bice, Dr. Sin Kung, Benson Fong, Ching-Hua Lee, Alan Napier, Anne Shoemaker, Dorothy Ruth Morris, Jacqueline White, Selena Royal, and Spencer Tracy as Lieutenant Colonel James H. Doolittle.